Sisters, working class heroes, this is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, going to talk about the day here in Harrisburg, the legislative agenda, which is pretty much what we've known. Pension reform, let's see how we can screw that up. An assault on workers, more of that continues as the House Labor and Industry Committee voted two anti-prevailing wage bills out of committee along party lines. Because look, the Republicans who control the entire political process here, if you want to know why nothing's getting done, it's, well, the radicals who have taken over that party have scared even the Republicans who were radicals yesterday. So we've seen a consistent march, not just to the right, but to the radical right, to the extreme right wing of the political fringe in this country. That's who's running our state government. The most extreme radical folks you can find. And you know, they're the ones calling Obama a socialist. Yeah. In fact, the same ones who are saying, you know, Obamacare is coming. It's the end of the world. It's the end. It's all over. It's death. It's horror. Yet Republicans are doing everything they can do to co-opt it. It's a beautiful dance. When you see the right wing of this country, when you see the corporatists do what they do best, which is manipulate sales techniques and advertising and marketing to say, hey, what we said yesterday was bad policy, we agree with today, but we're going to not let you know that we disagreed with it. We're just going to take it as our own and then blame the guy who proposed it, for being against it. It's masterful. Also going to talk about, evidently George Bush can read. Did you know that? He seems to believe that people don't think he can. Also going to talk about transportation, booze, and profit. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got to be honest. Watching the mainstream corporate-controlled media, that the fear-mongering has begun. The fear-mongering is constant. All I saw all day today was the events of yesterday. And frame by frame, in painstaking analysis of every frame and every bit of misery. And when the bomb went off, I don't know the man, I don't know the person's name who was the first one to fall after it went off, but I got to watch it in 20 different speeds and with commentary. I don't know who it was, but I know that this person went to the ground after the explosion, and I got to see that probably 20 different times. And I guess the question is that what we want from our news media? This kind of constant in your eye, in your ear, on your mind, fear-mongering. And our political leaders don't seem to be much of leaders anymore. You know, what happened to whenever I think of FDR, it's always, you know, this is a day that will live in infamy. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Yet, I see Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor saying, I think it's safe to say for many, the complacency that prevailed prior to 9/11 has returned. Really? The complacency. You mean people living their lives and not in constant fear. And, you know, his whole little rant was very bizarre to me. Because, you know, he went on to say, on 9/11, we forever disabused the notion that attacks like the ones that rocked Boston yesterday only happen on the fields of battle or in distant countries. He said, with the passage of time, however, the vigilant efforts of our military, intelligence, and law enforcement professionals, he says, I think it's safe to say for many the complacency that prevailed prior to September 11th actually returned. So is that that we as people have become complacent, or have those agencies become complacent? Because, you know, there's a whole bunch of different ways of looking at this. One, it's an attack on government. It's an attack on those agencies who, you know, they're supposed to be championing. But the other part of it is, it's my belief that they're attempting to attack the Obama administration. Now, we don't know who did this. But if you listen to the right-wingers, you listen to Stephen King, the Republican from Iowa, who said, you know, some of the speculation has come out that, yes, it was a foreign national, and speculating here that it was potentially a person on a student visa. So not only are we talking about Saudi nationals, students on visas, and, you know, we've got to go and look at all of them, the big picture, because, you know, how can we possibly have background checks on people buying guns? Because, hey, let's pull this into the gun debate. And we don't know who did this. We have no idea yet who's, I bet you, I guarantee we will. I guarantee they will find someone, because I can't imagine that there aren't 50 different angles of video that we don't know about that are being analyzed right now. You know, I was, my ex-wife, her brother-in-law, he worked for a pretty sizable police department, one of the big major cities, and his job was to do that videotaping and to make sure you got a shot of everybody in the crowd. So when you go to big public events, don't think you're not being videotaped. You are. And I'm not saying that to make people paranoid. It's the reality of the world that we live in. And it's my thought, and, you know, I may be wrong on this, but it's my thought that this is probably somebody who knows? If we're going to speculate that it was a Saudi national, I'm going to speculate it was somebody who, well, last year they ran, somebody tripped them, and they didn't get the finish. So they're angry at the Boston Marathon. Or some other irrational reason. Because for me, if it was Al-Qaeda that did this, don't you think Al-Qaeda would have said, hey, we did this? Don't you think someone would have taken credit for it? But beyond all of this, I go to this whole demonizing. You would think at moments like this, at moments in history where you have this something that should be unifying us, bringing us together as a community and saying, you know what, we're going to stand in opposition to this. This isn't the kind of country we are. We're not going to be feared into staying in our homes, and we're not going to be terrorized into changing our way of life. We're going to learn the lessons. We're going to do everything we can do to prevent it from happening in the future, but it's not going to change who we are fundamentally as a society and as a people. What I see is I see the right wing in this country going, hey, here's an opportunity to go after the black guy in the White House. Here's an opportunity to stop the gun legislation. Here's an opportunity to, well, to cause more strife and division. And I look at the attorney general from Texas, a guy named Greg Abbott, who yesterday told an audience of people that one thing that requires ongoing vigilance is the reality that the state of Texas is coming under a new assault. He said an assault from far more dangerous than what the world leader of North Korea threatened when he was going to add Austin, Texas, as to one of the recipients of his nuclear weapons. Oh, no. Much more to worry about that. The threat that we're getting is the threat from the Obama administration and his political machine. So North Korea, no, we don't have to worry about that. It's those Democrats. It's that Obama. It's his policies. And you gotta kind of give them credit for using a tragedy, using people's misery, while it's still fresh in people's mind, it's still vivid in their eye, that they're using this tragedy to divide us and being so blatant about it. And this just tells me how far to the extreme they have gone. And this has just been eating at me all day. Because after 9/11, look, this country did come together. As much as I didn't like George Bush, as much as I was one of the, I would stand up and say, I didn't vote for him. At that moment, that was our president. That was our leader. That was the guy who I wanted to succeed more than anything, because I understood, look, if he didn't, what it meant for the country. And the sad reality is we've got too many people in this country who are rooting for Obama to fail. Right from the beginning, the Limbaughs and the McConnells and all the radicals of that era, I hope he fails. Full well understanding that if he fails, you and me and our families and our communities, we fail along with him. You know, we can have honest disagreements about policy. We can have honest disagreements about direction. But at moments like these, I find it despicable. I find it absolutely despicable that you would use this moment as a moment to divide, as a moment to pit us against one another. You know, so if you're talking about the guns issue, you're talking about the immigration issue. They're using this. And look, we don't even know. We have no idea. No idea who did this. But what I do see a lot of fear-mongering. And I saw across the news, be suspicious of anyone carrying a large, heavy bag. I'm going, really? I see people, military people, getting off the train here in Harrisburg. I see them getting off the train with a large, heavy bag. Should I be suspicious of them? I see a guy walking around with a postal uniform on with a large, heavy bag. Should I be suspicious of him? And the reason I bring that up is once you start down that path, and the right loves pushing this on us because they like keeping us suspicious of each other. They like that we don't talk to our neighbors. They like that we're a divided community, because then it's easier to pit us against one another when they want to privatize our public goods, when they want to steal our pensions, when they want to give huge breaks to the handful at the expense of the many. It's easier to do that once you've got us divided and sliced and diced and pitted against one another, don't you think? I'm interested in your thoughts tonight on this. I didn't want to talk about the attack at all last night, but tonight, if you've got thoughts, comments, questions, something on your mind, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters Local 728 sanitation workers are on strike in Georgia against Republic Services Allied Waste. The union says it's an unfair labor practices strike to protest the company's violation of federal labor law. The workers are trying to get their first collective bargaining contract. Jamar Branch says that since a merger, he and other workers work longer hours, do more work, and had their pay cut. He says Republic Services Allied Waste isn't respecting workers.
You know, I'm standing up for what I believe is right, and I'm willing to stand on it, as long as it takes, whatever it takes. For me, myself, and my fellow employees, I would like to see other men, workers, get treated fairly and at least get paid the same, if other Republic workers.
From the Teamsters picket line in McDonough, Georgia, Hugh Vample says the company isn't respecting its workers and isn't acknowledging the struggle for dignity and respect for sanitation workers that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. died defending.
I'm proud that we're doing what we're doing at this point, and if there's anybody or any other corporation that's having the same or similar situation, that they have to stand up for what they believe in. I mean, it's a good thing as far as your family, your kids. It's the right thing to do, and never let any organization really make you feel less than the man that you are.
The Blue-Green Alliance Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference kicks off in Washington, D.C. today. The alliance consists of environmental, labor, and science groups. The conference will look at climate change issues and how that impacts infrastructure rebuilding, how to build a truly green future while providing the needed good jobs, the American Green Manufacturing Renaissance, and how to make the Blue-Green Labor Environmental Alliance actually work on the ground to advance a green economic future for America. The House is scheduled to vote on Republican-penned legislation which could see federal workers terminated if they have a tax lien with the federal government. Jesse Russell reports.
The Federal Employee Tax Accountability Act also requires prospective employees to certify that they have no delinquent tax debts. Federal employees with tax debt has been on the rise since the start of the recession, and it jumped significantly in 2011, the same year a federal pay freeze kicked in. That pay freeze was recently extended for a third year. It also comes on top of hundreds of thousands of federal employees, possibly facing a pay cut as high as 20% due to furloughs triggered by sequester cuts. According to numbers released by the Internal Revenue Service, federal workers have a delinquency rate of 3.2%. The delinquency rate for non-federal workers in the United States is 8.2%. The number of tax delinquencies among employees of the House of Representatives is above average at 3.7%. According to the Washington Post, additional data from the IRS show that only 0.4% of federal employees currently have tax liens.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guess what? The majority of the American people believe we should have a gold standard, not a paper standard.
Big fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows. Big fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So our governor doing the whole Brazil-Chile thing. He tweeted out today that he understood that both Brazil and Chile understand Pennsylvania's role in safe energy development. He also said that he was sitting down talking with companies about establishing more relationships because, you know, it's all about relationships. And, you know, his meetings going very well, you know, pretty well. And my thought yesterday is while he was in Chile, since he seems to want to do what Pinochet did to the Chilean people, you know, some number of years back with their pension fund, maybe he could take some hints from Panera now, who is taking back the pension fund to make sure that all the people of this country get some retirements. Just a thought. Maybe Tom could take some hints. Just a thought. Anyway, I've got Dr. Steven Herzenberg on the line, executive director of the Keystone Research Center. He testified today in front of the state government committee about the pension assaults that are going on, or as I've been calling it, pension deform. Steve, thanks for taking time for me.
Glad to do it, Rick. Good evening.
So I look at our governor going to Chile and going to Brazil, doing this whole junket to bring a couple of jobs back while we're seeing hundreds leaving the state.
But I like your idea better. It's the social policy tour.
And that's what I was going to ask you. You know, do you think there's any thought? Because it seems to me he's doing exactly what Pinochet did.
The American, the Pennsylvania version of Pinochet.
P.A. Pinochet, right there.
The neoliberal let the market rip approach. Yeah, no, I mean, he has a lot to learn from the Chile of the last, whatever it is, 15 years since Pinochet left, and Brazil since Lula came in, again, probably about 15 years ago. A lot to learn in terms of, you know, a really sophisticated view of the relationship between government and markets. A lot to learn in terms of, you know, an understanding of, a wide range of policy alternatives. You know, imagine a governor who could actually think intelligently about different policy approaches. But that's not our lot.
Well, that's not where we are.
Yeah.
But what we have is, we have what appears to me, and maybe you've got a better explanation. What you have, what I'm seeing, is an ideological drive to destroy state employees, public employees, and to steal back all of the benefits that they have fought for over the years and hand them over to profiteers on Wall Street. That's about the best way I can sum it up in my view.
That's a fair reading, I think, of the information we have. Absolutely. Again, what I was talking about today was both several bills, the pension bills that are before the legislature, but really mostly I was talking about the governor's proposal and all the different ways that it actually, among other things, soaks the taxpayer. One of the things I said today is that the governor's pension plan has a serious case of pension deficit disorder.
Why is that? I mean, because
it is a little strange. Again, you spend months rallying people to the need for pension changes based on we got this big unfunded liability, this big pension debt, and then you come forward with a proposal that
makes it worse.
Makes it worse, right? It reduces the investment returns on your pension plan because you close it to new blood, and so everybody ages and retires as a group, and so you have to invest in more conservative ways, and so you don't get 7.5% return on your investment every year. You get maybe 6.5%, then 6%, then 5.5%, and each time that goes down, the taxpayer has to make up the difference. Then the other thing that was part of the focus of a briefing paper we released today called There He Goes Again was Corbett's plan reduces the state's pension contributions over the next 5 years, which, again, he, in November, his pension report joined the chorus of people who've criticized past legislatures under three previous governors for not making pension contributions and taking that money that should have gone into pensions and using it for corporate tax cuts or using it for different spending priorities. Our brief walked through all the places in his pension report where he criticized the failure to make necessary pension contributions. And what did he come forward with? A plan to kick the can down the road for another 5 years, driving up that unfunded liability. So, yeah, a serious case of pension deficit disorder.
So basically what got us into the situation we're in is the medicine he's advocating to make it better?
Right.
How's that going to make it better? And you said we have this unfunded liability, and I keep hearing this huge number, and you know, people run from big numbers. You know, $41 billion, and people, oh, my God, the sky's falling, $41 billion. Right. We really don't. That's if everything stopped today. Everyone, the governor who quit, you know, all of the legislature, all of the state employees today said we're all retiring and we're taking our money with us.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is that's something we don't have to pay down tomorrow or the next year or in this decade or in the next decade, right? I mean, pension plans, we've had a pension plan for it must be like 90 or maybe 100 years now. These two pension plans have been around, and so we can take our time, and over the decades that we have to recover from the pension hole that resulted from the financial market collapses of the last 10 years plus the failure to make those contributions, it's not as much money over a long period of time. So
But decades doesn't seem to be as immediate. That doesn't sound like a crisis to me, Steve.
So again, one of the conspiracy theories that you can't help wondering about is that that part of the thinking might be if you manage to drive up the unfunded liability, then that's an even more severe crisis, and you can hack away 5 years from now, 10 years from now, in an even more devastating way at public sector pensions. You know, again, I don't really tend to think in such conspiratorial terms, at least without a lot more evidence than I've got today, but you can't help wonder.
Well, you can't help but wonder if the crisis that has been manufactured was on purpose. Because, look, we created this crisis. This was a man-made crisis. This wasn't a natural disaster. It didn't just fall out of the sky. These were decisions, policy decisions that were made over the years that this guy seems to want to continue. And the end result of it, obviously, is a much worse manufactured crisis.
Right. And one of the things we did in the brief we released today, and again, this shocked even me. I mean, I've known, people have known that in Pennsylvania, much more than most other state pension funds, employees contribute a lot. I mean, they contribute over the last decade and today, they contribute about 7% on average across the two big pension plans.
Now, hold on. Is 7.5% across the two pension plans?
So 7%. 7.5% in the PSERS plan nowadays and sort of 6.25% in the state workers' pension plan. So if you average across the two plans, you're talking about 7% of each. So 7 cents of every dollar of salary that state and school employees get comes out of their check. They don't get that money in their take-home pay. It goes into the pension.
But I thought that when state workers had these free gilded pensions with hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's why we're educating people about the truth. But again, I think people listening to your show know that Pennsylvania state workers, school employees have been putting in a lot of money into the pensions, and the problem in the last 12 years since 2001 has been that the employer, the state and school boards, haven't been putting in their share.
But, how much have they been putting in?
So we did a bunch of numbers, and I actually discovered a data set that I didn't know before. And so we took a look at, like, in Pennsylvania versus other states, what's the ratio of employer contributions employee contributions to employer contributions. And so in most states, that's about a half. That is, employees only put in about half as much as employers. So employers in the other states are carrying the weight of the pension plan. That's over the last, the 2001 to 2009 period, which was the period we really built up our pension debt.
Right. So if I put in 50 cents, the employer put in a dollar.
In Pennsylvania, it's just about the flip of that. If the state put in a dollar, employees in Pennsylvania put in nearly $2. So the ratio of employee to employer contributions in Pennsylvania is over 3.5 times the national average. I mean, that's a huge difference.
That is
right?
A huge difference.
I mean, so actually, I did a rough calculation. Hey, what if employers since 2001 in Pennsylvania put in enough to bring our ratio of the balance between employee and employer contributions in Pennsylvania to where it is nationally, right?
Right.
So you're talking with investment earnings, on those additional contributions, you're talking $23 billion.
Wow.
So it doesn't go, the 41 doesn't go away. But I mean, that really tells you that, it tells you two things. It really reinforces that this is not a problem that public employees created. Right. So they put lots of their own skin into their pensions, and you can't take it away from them after the fact. That's the one thing it tells you. And then again, it really does show you how criminally irresponsible the repeated diversion of pension contributions has been, which is why it's that much more astounding that the governor's plan, after pointing out this foolhardy, short-sighted behavior from the past, comes forward with, ta-da, let's do it again.
More of the same. We're bringing you the same things that brought you the bad outcomes.
Right. That's the old definition of, insanity, right? You keep on doing the same thing and expecting a different result. We're going to get the same result. We're going to get higher pension debt. And again, if that went through, I actually don't think, well, who knows whether they'll get away with lowering the pension contributions. One of the things that was interesting in the hearing today is the Pennsylvania School Boards Association, this Pennsylvania school business officials. It seemed like basically everybody who spoke while I was there was of a mind that we got to, you know, we can't reduce the contributions that we're supposed to make under the 2010 Pension Reform Act.
Right.
You know, enough already. We learned our lesson. So hopefully that part of the governor's plan, and for that matter, the other parts of the governor's plan won't go through.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. In looking at the reforms of, I guess it's Act 120.
Yeah.
Is that enough? I mean, we've been hearing a lot of people say that that's not going to be enough. This huge crisis is coming, and the sky's falling, the end of the world. But you did this stuff back in 2010. My thought is it hasn't really been given enough time to actually work. I mean, you have reduced. They did reduce the future benefits for future workers. They did screw the next generation. They've done a lot of things to diminish the benefit down the road. How much worse do they want to go?
Well, again, part of it is that, and again, no one's come forward yet with any legitimate idea for reducing the unfunded liability, at least by directly addressing pensions, right? I mean, the governor's come forward with the idea of taking back some pensions from current workers for their future years of service, which the courts have been pretty clear that you can't do that. The pension is a, you know, contract that whatever the rules are when someone gets into the plan, you know, you can't change the rules unilaterally.
Well, let me ask you, that's an interesting thing you brought up, because I've been making the argument that the governor wants to do what Mitt Romney and his ilk have done to employees in the private sector for years, which is, you know, run them through something like bankruptcy, have a judge, you know, wipe out their pensions, put the pension on somebody else, and wash your hands of it. Is that the business running government like business?
Again,
idea?
I mean, I would be fairly, even though I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I would be fairly confident that, you know, that's certainly part of the right-wing playbook, right? The American Legislative Exchange Committee, whether it's Scranton or Stockton, California?
Yes.
I mean, so you kind of know that train is coming down the track. Now, which track? Is it the Pennsylvania track? When is it on the Pennsylvania track, right? I don't know the answers to those questions. You know, I'd like to think that we're a long way here from winning an argument in court. You know, I mean, $41 billion is a lot of money, but with an annual budget of 30 plus or around 30 billion, you know, if you could pay this off in 30 years, you know, it's 4%,
right.
Or 4 and a bit%. So, and again, there are some circumstances in which that liability will go down more quickly. I mean, financial markets have been doing great recently. I mean, one of the questions I was asked, because everyone wants to know, what's the solution? What you're going to do?
Jobs.
You know, well, so yeah, exactly. So the answer is, on the one hand, if financial markets do well for a period of time, very well, and outperform the assumptions in the pension plans, then the pension debt goes down. But the other thing is exactly right. I mean, if we didn't have austerity economics, if we didn't have, you know, Republicans in Congress slowing down the national economy, if we didn't have the governor and his friends here in Harrisburg slowing down the economy, increasing the unemployment rate relative to the national average, not taking millions of dollars, you know, in Medicaid expansion money that we desperately need to provide people with health care, but we also need to get that money into the economy, you know, that's foolishness. And again, if we had the right policies creating those jobs you're talking about, that would also increase tax revenues, more income tax, more sales tax. And when we have more money, more state revenues, then our pension problem becomes more manageable, as does our need to invest in education and infrastructure, in transportation and so on down the line.
Yeah, well, it'd be nice to see a transportation bill. You know, but I look at this and what I'm seeing being proposed, and there's a lot of proposals out there, these hybrid plans or going from a defined benefit to a defined contribution, you know, basically making the situation worse. And when I've sat in on some of these hearings, even the experts that the people who want to change the system trot out say, yeah, it's going to be much more costly to shift from a defined benefit to a defined contribution. It's going to be more costly, but it's ideologically right.
Yeah, I mean, so there's some, I mean, at least I guess I can almost respect the conservatives who who say they don't, they want workers to bear all the financial market risk, right? So I mean, the way it is with a defined benefit pension, the worker doesn't bear financial market risk, and they get a pension they can count on, usually anyway. They know what it's going to be during their career, and they get that money, and they live the kind of retirement that they expected to be able to live. But the government does bear some, taxpayers do bear some financial market risk. Although, again, there are plenty of very well-managed pension plans that didn't take contribution holidays, that don't have a lot of pension debt. So if we would just manage our pension plans well, the taxpayer wouldn't have a lot of risk. But having said that, there are some conservatives who just hate the idea that the taxpayer's on the hook for anything, and who don't put much weight on, okay, fine, Joe and Joe middle class, we're ready to retire, but then we had a financial market meltdown and they had to work another 7 years, or, you know, they saw a 50% drop in their income when they retired. You know, they don't care about that. You know, you and I think, well, we do care about, right? Our values are, if somebody works hard and plays by the rules for 35, 40, 45 years, then they ought to have a middle class, you know, retirement, like many people in the private sector, you know, did 15
did
and certainly 30 years ago.
Did being the key to that sentence.
Did, yeah.
You know, but I look at this in the last line of questioning, and the question comes down to, the bigger question is the difference between a defined benefit and a defined contribution for society. And I would argue that having that defined benefit, knowing this is in time, good times or bad times, this is what you're going to get, and this is what you're going to be able to participate in our economy with, instead of having a defined contribution situation where, after 2008, you ended up with, well, instead of a 401k, a 200.5.
Yeah, and I think Social Security makes your point for people in a way that's very accessible. I mean, everybody knows, I mean, Social Security may not be generous, you know, for a lot of people, but, you know, it's there and people count on it, and it has a cost of living adjustment, and you get a statement every year that tells you, you know, if you keep earning what you're currently earning for another period of time, this is where you get retired at 62, this is where you get retired at 65. You know, right? And so I think people need to think more about the Social Security example and how great that is.
Yep.
And then say, hey, let's make our pensions as much like Social Security as we can in terms of, you know, being a stable source of income that we can count on. Once you understand that, then holding on to a defined benefit plan makes a whole lot more sense. And when, you know, and where you can't get a defined benefit plan, you can do things to create big pension pools and to have low cost management of those pools and professional management of those pools. To make sure that people don't have to bargain for, you know, turning their individual account into an annuity one at a time. You know, when you do that, you get taken to the cleaner, and so if you do the negotiation about what your individual account translates into in terms of, if you convert it into a monthly payment until you die, you know, you can get a better deal when you're negotiating, you know, with a big pool, for example, right, that's managed by the state, as California is now planning to do for a lot of private sector workers. So, yeah, I mean, that's the real pension debate. You and I both know that it's nuts that in a country that keeps getting richer on average, that we're seeing retirement security taken away from people. That's unnecessary, and we've got to start going again in the other direction.
I'm right there with you. I understand you guys got the four primers at KeystoneResearch.org.
/pensions, but if you just do the main website, just remember the name Keystone Research Center or Google it. You go there, you'll see the pension issue page, and yeah, there's a fact sheet, there's the four primers, there's testimony we've delivered several times, people can get all the information they need to sort of keep up on the pension debate and what the real facts are from the perspective of the middle class.
And we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Dr. Stephen Herzenberg's name right there. Steve, it's always great talking with you.
Hey,
I appreciate the time.
Take care, Rick.
Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. Again, keystoneresearch.org. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people and the talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
We just had a presidential election in which an admitted tax dodger advocated lower taxes on corporations and speculators like him. And voters rejected that idea and him. Also, polls show that about 7 out of 10 Americans think corporations should pay more in taxes than they do now, and that loopholes allowing corporations to dodge their taxes should be plugged pronto. Yet, a tiny percentage of Americans, the CEOs of huge multinational corporations, are demanding that Congress do the exact opposite of what the people clearly want them to do and instead enact those special corporate tax breaks that last year's presidential loser pushed. Whose side is your member of Congress on? You'd better check, because the corporate powers are pushing furiously for a deceptive gimmick called the territorial tax. It declares that the profits of U.S. corporations can be taxed only by the territories in which they're banked. Google is one of the giants that are hot for this scheme, for it stashed 80% of its 2011 profits in Bermuda. That's $9.8 billion Google got, not from sales in Bermuda, but from customers elsewhere. Yet it banked all of the money in this tiny territory that essentially doesn't tax corporate profits. Thus, the nifty territorial tax is Google's way of paying no U.S. income tax on those profits to support the schools, police, research, transportation networks, and other public systems that allow it to flourish as an American corporation. This is Jim Hightower saying, worse, this territorial scam is an incentive for multinational corporations to shift more of their operations and jobs out of country and to rig their books so all profits appear to be earned offshore. To learn which corporations are behind this, contact Citizens for Tax Justice, ctj.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The second topic, which is, you said you get a deduction for taking a plant overseas. Look, I've been in business for 25 years. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Thank goodness he did. And, you know, wish we would have done to him like he did to Seamus the dog. But that's just a whole nother thought for a whole nother day. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. And, yes, we do give tons of money for people to keep offshoring tax breaks for companies. And what amazed me, he calls himself a businessman, didn't know that. Because, you know, the reality, it was never really about running business. It was about running them up in debt. And then profiting from them. That's the model. And I look at this pension thing. To me, and I've been saying this for the longest time, is you've got these business people who want to run government like a business. We had George W. Bush who said, you know, first CEO president. And look what he did. Saddled the nation with tons of debt. CEOs, that's what they do. It's about maximizing shareholder wealth. The people who have the direct interest in the company, not the workers, not the customers, not the community, none of that, the shareholders. Or in Bush's case, the people who funded his campaign. And I look at this in the same exact way. Governor Corbett, George Bush, to a large extent, Obama, all of them. Policies that they're all like little corporations in and of themselves. And I've been saying for a while, and I'm not the only one, they should all just wear NASCAR jackets. Who's got a PC? This way we can make educated, informed decisions based on which guy is being pulled by which strings. Pretty simple stuff. For instance, Democratic Senator Ron Wyden, a fairly progressive guy, you know, right on a good number of the issues. His longtime chief of staff, his chief of staff who had been with him since 1992. He's now going to be the lobby arm of ExxonMobil. And he's going to lobby on energy, environment, and tax issues, according to documents made public just recently. And you go, well, what's the big deal about that? Well, the big deal about that is what you've got is you've got people who have connections into people in very high positions. Understand, Ron Wyden is the chair of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Extremely powerful position. So now ExxonMobil has bought themselves someone with Ron Wyden's in Wyden's ear. You think about how this goes on all the time. Remember, you know, Tom DeLay's senior advisor, also a lobbyist for ExxonMobil. So it's bipartisan. And this is the thing that gets all of this push. All of this move towards corporate rule, it's both parties, man, because they're both bought and paid for by the same people. And what it is the corporateers, they want to run government just like they've run the private sector into the ground. And I was having lunch with a friend today, and we were talking about our bus tour. And, you know, I was explaining the theme, the idea that I have for this, and the reason that I think it's important that we have these discussions all across the country, because I see things as kind of a steamroller, the wheel of a steamroller. You have a situation where tax dollars, government investment creates something. It's turned into private interest. You know, you give it over to private interest. They bankrupt it, and then we bail it out. Then we give it back to them. They bankrupt it. We bail it out. We give it back to them. They bail it. They destroy it. We bail them out. It's this constant steamroller. And you, me, the taxpayer, the worker, the person at the bottom, we're the ones being steamrolled because we're the ones who are paying for it through, well, lower educational opportunity, higher student loan debt, terrible infrastructure, you name it. And it's this constant move towards business friendly. Oh, we need to be more business friendly. So what we've seen in the private sector, and look, there are a lot of private sector workers who got screwed. Union workers, non-union workers, management employees, you name it. You punch a clock for a living, you work for somebody else, chances are the 80s and 90s, you got screwed with your pension. Because that's when the people who said, hey, we can play with other people's money. It's not mine, it's theirs. We're going to gamble it away. And it's what they want to do with these pension funds, which is why I've always been leery of a corporation holding my money. I would much prefer what they're doing in California, as Dr. Herzenberg brought up at the end of the last segment, this idea that, and I wish Pennsylvania, if we really have this big of a problem, it would be nice to see Pennsylvania open up the opportunity for low-wage workers to get a defined retirement plan through the state by contributing X amount of their pay into the fund and getting credits like anybody else would. Expand the pool of people instead of, as we've been doing for the last couple of years, through austerity, limiting the number of public workers, destroying the pooling base, 20,000 education professionals to the curb. What does that do to your pension fund? What does that do to the plan? Well, it takes 20,000 people out of it, doesn't it? The liability for their pensions into the future is still there. And this is what they don't tell you. The right wing, oh, we got this big liability. Yeah, part of it is you kicked most of the people out. That liability's still there. They're just not funding it anymore. They're not putting any money into it, which we need to expand that pool, which giving workers the opportunity. And the same thing I've been saying about Medicare. Give me the opportunity to buy into Medicare. What if I don't want to enrich a big for-profit or one of the big nonprofits that spend a lot of money? What if I don't want to do it? What if I want to buy into Medicare? We should have the opportunity. And the same thing with this pension thing. And you keep looking at all of the things they put in front of us, folks. It's always create a crisis and then give us a bad alternative. Create something that's really bad and give us an even worse alternative. Because look at the pension situation. They say, wow, we're $41 billion, $41 billion liability. And we know that that's ridiculous. That would be if everybody retired at this very moment, which is never going to happen. But the solution that we keep seeing is, well, we'll go to a defined contribution and shift all the risk onto the backs of the employees. And this way we won't have to fund it. And it won't cost us any money. Except you still have this huge defined benefit plan that you're going to have to service for the next 50 years with no money coming into it. And that's the part of this equation that they don't tell us. So for me, it comes down to, are we in this together or are we on our own? And I guess, you know, it comes back down to a couple of very simple frames. You know, this is another push and pull between labor and capital. Push and pull between the world views of are we astronauts or are we cowboys? Are we in this together or hooray for me and screw you? That's the question that everything seems to come back to. And for me, when you look at Social Security, which we should really be strengthening, we got a president who is talking about weakening it. And I read an opinion piece by Judd Gregg. You may remember Judd Gregg was the governor of New Hampshire, also a three-term senator from New Hampshire, was the chairman and ranking member of the Senate Budget Committee. He was also a member of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Foreign Relations. He wrote an op-ed, you know, saying, well, the good, bad, and the ugly of the Obama budget. And the first thing he throws out is, you know, a good thing is the president is willing to declare that he wants to reform those entitlements, you know, like that Social Security that you worked and you paid into and that Medicare that you paid into and all of those things that you paid into, you thought, those are entitlements, didn't you know? It's an entitlement. So he goes into this wonderful rant about how wonderful chain CPI is going to be. He points out that Paul Ryan said, well, it's just a technical change. Judd Gregg says it's true. But it's also a big-time stick into the eye of the people on the left who believe any change in Social Security is heresy. And I don't believe that that's the left. And I would love to hear some Republicans who go, I don't want Social Security to change either, because most of my Republican friends, they like Social Security. Social Security pulls really high because people understand that, you know what? That's the safety net under my feet when I retire. That's the baseline. That's the line in the sand. Those are the people who after 2008 did not fall into poverty because they were guaranteed that meager amount of money. But Judd Gregg writes something I find really honest. Give him credit where credit is due. Of Chain CPI, Judd Gregg writes, it will, of course, not have major impact in the next few years. He said, but the savings from this change will compound dramatically in the second and third decade of its use. It will literally add years to the solvency of the Social Security system without any noticeable effect on present recipients. He said, it is a good and appropriate change, but more importantly, it's an opening, and this is the important part, man, it's an opening to other changes in entitlements, especially Medicare, that will allow the future cost of these programs to be more affordable. For who? And, you know, I keep hearing, we're going to save money. From where? They're going to be more affordable. For who? And when I start thinking about this 20 years down the road, 30 years down the road, wait a minute. That's me. That's people in their 40s. That's people in their 50s. That's people in their late 30s who are planning on Social Security going to be there. This is going to diminish that benefit. And then he goes on to say, well, you know, this is a very, you know, there is the bad side. This president is a spending juggernaut. He is, of course, a very liberal president. And you go, wait a second. He is putting out Social Security on the chopping block. How in the hell does that make him liberal? How does it make him liberal? And there's so much to this that just makes me want to scream. He goes on to say that the ugly, is that we need tax reform. And I so heartily agree that we do. But his idea is, well, we need to do what Reagan did, lower the rates, get rid of some loopholes, you know, especially those middle-class loopholes, get rid of that stuff. But I loved his idea, his statement about income tax, about taxes in general. He said that, you know, our tax code is under, he believes, doesn't allow us to compete and is incomprehensible and all of those things, which, you know, to some extent, the incomprehensible part, if you get into complicated stuff, for most people, could be. He says it creates an incentive to invest not for the purpose of getting the most efficient use of capital, but in many cases for the sole purposes of avoiding taxes. He said this is debilitating to our economy and hurts job creation. And you know, I thought about that most of today. What business person is going to spend money avoiding paying taxes that he could have put to more efficient uses in business? And the sad reality is the ones who have more than they possibly need. Because it's not about business with these people. It's about control. And you know what I find really, really amazing? Much like the guy who worked for Wyden going off to work for ExxonMobil, former New Hampshire governor, former three-time New Hampshire U.S. senator, chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, member of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Foreign Operations. Well, he's also an international advisor to Goldman Sachs. Makes you think, doesn't it? Quick break, back with hour two. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Teamsters Local 728 sanitation workers are on strike in Georgia against Republic Services Allied Waste. The union says it's an unfair labor practices strike to protest the company's violation of federal labor law. The workers are trying to get their first collective bargaining contract. Jamar Branch says that since a merger, he and other workers work longer hours, do more work, and had their pay cut. He says Republic Services Allied Waste isn't respecting workers.
You know, I'm standing up for what I believe is right, and I'm willing to stand on it, as long as it takes, whatever it takes. For me, myself, and my fellow employees, I would like to see other men, workers, get treated fairly and at least get paid the same as other Republic workers.
From the Teamsters picket line in McDonough, Georgia, Hugh Vample says the company isn't respecting its workers and isn't acknowledging the struggle for dignity and respect for sanitation workers Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. died defending.
I'm proud that we're doing what we're doing at this point, and if there's anybody or any other corporation that's having the same or similar situation, that they have to stand up for what they believe in. I mean, it's a good thing as far as your family, your kids. It's the right thing to do, and never let any organization really make you feel less than the man that you are.
The Blue-Green Alliance Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference kicks off in Washington, D.C. today. The alliance consists of environmental, labor, and science groups. The conference will look at climate change issues and how that impacts infrastructure rebuilding, how to build a truly green future while providing the needed good jobs, the American Green Manufacturing Renaissance, and how to make the Blue-Green Labor Environmental Alliance actually work on the ground to advance a green economic future for America. The House is scheduled to vote on Republican-penned legislation which could see federal workers terminated if they have a tax lien with the federal government. Jesse Russell reports.
The Federal Employee Tax Accountability Act also requires prospective employees to certify that they have no delinquent tax debt. Federal employees with tax debt has been on the rise since the start of the recession, and it jumped significantly in 2011, the same year a federal pay freeze kicked in. That pay freeze was recently extended for a third year. It also comes on top of hundreds of thousands of federal employees, possibly facing a pay cut as high as 20% due to furloughs triggered by sequester cuts. According to numbers released by the Internal Revenue Service, federal workers have a delinquency rate of 3.2%. The delinquency rate for non-federal workers in the United States is 8.2%. The number of tax delinquencies among employees of the House of Representatives is above average at 3.7%. According to the Washington Post, additional data from the IRS show that only 0.4% of federal employees currently have tax liens.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So as the war on workers, especially organized workers, continues, I think it's important that you bring up the realities. And I look at this report out from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration on worksite deaths in New York City. That showed that 72% of the 2012 deaths on construction sites in New York City took place at non-union work sites. And you go, well, why is that? How is that possible? Why such a large number? You go, well, one, skill, but two, and most importantly, no voice. If you don't have the ability to tell your employer, hey, there's something wrong, we need to fix it, we're not doing it, what do you think happens? Well, what you have is an unsafe workplace. And what I see our Republican friends here in Pennsylvania and across the country doing is trying to destroy conditions, trying to destroy jobs that construction workers or workers in general have across the state. And today, the House Labor and Industry Committee voted out two anti-prevailing wage bills, again, designed to destroy wages and to destroy the construction industry, which is why I've asked our good friend Abe Amoros, Legislative Director for the Pennsylvania Laborers International Union, to come talk to us. Abe, thanks for taking time for me.
You're welcome, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I look at this report from New York. 72% of the people killed on the job on construction sites in New York City non-union workplaces. There's something to that to me.
Yes, Rick, that's horrifically unacceptable. And it's so important that we understand that having a safe workplace benefits everyone. It benefits not just the workers, but it benefits the end user who happens to be either the taxpayer or the person paying for a specific project. And it's always the right thing to do. I think it's just something that we take for granted on a daily basis, yet we really should not. The safest places to work in America are union places.
Because you have that voice. And, you know, I look at today the House Labor and Industry Committee voting out these two anti... What is it about prevailing wage that has the Republicans just so wadded up or bunched up in the panties? Because, you know, last year, about the middle of last year, this Representative Brad Roy from the western part of the state sent out a co-sponsorship memo against prevailing wage. You know, we should do away with prevailing wage for... How did it go? For construction projects that are for the kids,
yeah.
You know, to get rid of that, because, you know, especially kids who have disabilities or have lost a military parent. He says, I think we can all agree children who are sick, have disabilities, or have lost a parent have greater needs than the building trade unions.
Yeah, how about it? As if union families don't have children with disabilities, as if union families don't have elderly parents that need care. You know, these exemptions that are carved out are so clever, Rick. And what happened today at that Labor and Industry Committee is nothing more than another assault on working families. There were two bills. I was present at that meeting. One would raise the threshold from $25,000 to $100,000. And the second one would play around with a definition of maintenance work and it would remove prevailing wage from maintenance work. And all of this, Rick, comes from this concerted effort, this drumbeat of lies by the Republicans, particularly in South Central Pennsylvania, who say that the cost of labor is what's killing projects. That is absolutely false. It is not the cost of labor that's driving up projects. Rick, I was out in Washington County 2 weeks ago, where the director of planning told me what's killing projects are these ridiculous fees in terms of engineering studies that are out there, many of them mandated by the state. Yet nobody talks about that. What they do is they attack the workers. They say that costs are between 30 and 50% of the projects. I mean, that's an absolute lie. But when you tell a lie as often as they do, it's going to stick sometimes.
Yeah, but
and
the
then
people...
you have local officials, such as township supervisors, such as mayors, and such as school board directors doing the same thing, out there saying, oh, we got to cut back on prevailing wage because it's killing our projects, which is killing the taxpayers. These are absolute falsehoods. They're lies. They're evil, rotten, stinking lies that have to stop. And we have to take it upon ourselves to say, wait a minute, this is completely wrong. Study after study after study shows that the labor costs are between 9 and 13%, which is not unlike construction projects in the private industry or non-union construction projects. You know, these lies have just got to stop. And, you know, I got to hand it to the labor and industry chairman today, Bill Keller. He stood up and said, you know, you guys have got to stop this attack on prevailing wage and trying to take from those workers who bust their humps on a daily basis with their hands in their backs. Stop this. You guys have got to stop this. And if you want Democratic votes on the transportation bill, you need to stop this nonsense on prevailing wage.
But Abe, I saw it on the news. The school district overpaid for a roof.
Yeah.
I saw it. They told me.
It's always the same thing. I have seen reports. Some of these reports, by the way, Rick, have been completely skewed against the worker because it's so easy to pick on the little guy. What you really have to do is look at the entire cost of the project. And then you have these greedy contractors who are out there saying, you know, if we cut back on labor costs, what's going to happen is we're going to save taxpayers' dollars. I don't know of any contractor breathing air on this planet that's not going to pocket that difference. And what they don't talk about are those ridiculous engineering costs that drive up the cost of projects. And, Rick, you know, I've seen it with my own eyes. When I was an elected official in the city of York, we would have stacks and stacks of paper, and I would call them $100,000 to $300,000 stacks of paper because that's what those studies cost. That's what they run. It's crazy. It's absolutely outrageous. And yet people look at the worker as the bad guy, the ham and egger who gets up every morning, who busts his or her chops every day to get to work, puts in a solid day, sometimes overtime, just to go home, shower, have a decent meal with their families, watch television, and do it again the next day. There's nothing wrong with that. They need a decent, livable wage for the kind of work that they do. I mean, we take it for granted, yet you've got these bad guys, these rotten people out there just lying their tails off and saying all these crazy things that are being picked up by the mainstream media. And these news conferences, such as the one yesterday, Rick, with these county commissioners and mayors, up on the in the Capitol Rotunda on the steps saying, we've got to cut back on prevailing wage. Prevailing wage is killing our projects. And yet, you know, we have to do a better job of saying, no, this is not right. And when you started off this segment talking about safety and unsafe standards in New York City and the non-union sites, it's because we don't say enough. You're absolutely right. We've got to be more vocal. We've got to say, this is crazy. Enough is enough. Let's stop the insanity. Let's get message out there a lot stronger, because we're on the good side. I mean, we're on the right side here. We're on the side of the angels on this issue.
Let me ask you, the two bills that are put forth, any guarantees that me as a taxpayer, you as a taxpayer, the workers, of the any guarantees we're going to save money? Because, you know, I keep hearing we're going to, the Tea Party think tank tells me we're going to save 30% on building projects. Is it written in the law I'm going to save 30%?
Right. They come up with these figures, Rick, because, again, they repeat it over and over, but they're not founded on any kind of serious studies. Everything that they have put out there are done by conservative think tanks, whereas our information comes from independent sources, comes from university studies that I've seen. The ones I've seen are university studies that show that labor costs are between 9 and 13%, and what's really jacking up the cost of these projects, not just the engineering studies that I mentioned earlier, but also the cost of materials.
Right.
The cost of asphalt is going up. The cost of concrete is going up. Steel, all kinds of equipment costs that are going up as well. You can't blame this on the backs of the workers, yet nobody talks about this.
Yeah.
Because the workers are the easiest target in America, because they claim that the workers don't have a voice. Well, we are the voice of the workers. We're the voice of the middle class, and I'm tired of being... I'm tired of having my dog kicked around, Rick. I really am.
I'm with you.
And, you know, I haven't seen a single credible study that shows that labor costs are 30% and above. I mean, that's just crazy talk.
Well, let's be extremely generous. Let's say labor, we've got the best paid laborers in the entire world, and the labor cost is 30%. In order to save 30% on a building project, how much would the workers get paid then?
That's exactly right, Rick. That's exactly right.
I mean,
right.
It's, to me, it's simple logic.
Right.
I keep hearing the Tea Party think tank telling me, well, we could save all this money. Where are you going to save it from? If,
that's right.
As you're saying, 9 to 13%, we can only save 9 to 13% because that's what wages are.
That's exactly right, my friend. And the other thing is, let's say, Rick, that it was 30% of the cost. Let me just say this in defense of the workers. It would be worth every penny because we've got skilled craftsmen on the job with a tremendous amount of experience who know what they're doing and are going to make sure that that project is done correctly the first time, that that roof that you mentioned is placed on there and is safe and is doing what it's supposed to do for a very long time. So, you know, the argument just doesn't hold water, in my opinion. So what do? They go out there and they lie and put a bullseye on the back of the workers out there, the guys that just want to do good by their families, go out there on a daily basis, just like everybody else in America, and yet they're the ones that are demonized by the right wing, by the contractors, and by these Republicans who just don't get it.
Let me ask you this. You know, as the legislative director for LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, as a lobbyist for a labor organization, there's somebody out there who's going, well, he's got to say this because prevailing wage is only good for those unions.
Well, let me just say this to those naysayers out there who may or may not be listening. Listen, good paying wages are good for the entire marketplace. When union dues or when union wages are paid, that means you're going to have a competitive marketplace where everybody's wages are going to go up, which has a tremendous benefit in every community because every family either pays a mortgage or rent, has a car payment, goes to the grocery store, and circulates dollars in every community. So what unions do is they make it a healthier marketplace because the wages are fair wages. These are not wages that are astronomical by any stretch of the imagination. And, again, they want to demonize us.
Are they union wages?
These are fair wages. These are wages that are dictated by the marketplace. It's a fair system where the contractor submits his wage rates to the Department of Labor and Industry, which sets the rate because the union contractors and the good guys are the only ones submitting their information. You know, there was an amendment today, Rick, that was shot down that would have required every contractor to submit wages to the Department of Labor and Industry, and it was shot down 15 to 10 on party lines because these guys want it both ways. They are the biggest hypocrites on the face of the earth. They claim that these projects are costing too much because of the prevailing wage, yet they won't fill out the surveys of what they're paying people because they're paying people a pittance, nothing. They all want everybody to work for 10 bucks an hour and no health care benefits. They don't want people to see just how horrible they treat their employees. And, you know, that's going to hurt them in the end as well when they bid. But, you know, they want it both ways. They want the wages to go down, but they don't want to be accountable for it. And that's something we need to talk about more because that's a big, big piece of this equation.
I'm right there with you. Let me ask you last line of questioning I've got. You know, for me, you know, the construction industry needs work. We don't need to be talking. I wish Republicans would spend as much time fixing our infrastructure as they have spent on going after wages for workers. And I noticed that a couple of Republicans have this great idea of switching the governor wants to privatize the wine and spirit shops, what I've been calling, and he wants to use the money for education. You know, shots for tots, booze for books, whatever you want to call that. Now some Republicans want to say, well, we don't want to give that money to education. No, no. We want to use it for roads and bridges. And I thought, what a great idea. Drinking and driving. We can put beer in every store. We can have drive-throughs with, you can buy a single cold beer like I used to be able to do in Ohio. And what better way to fund our roads than to be able to drink and drive on the roads at the same time and know that your consumption of that alcohol is paving the road under your wheels?
You know, they'll stop at nothing, Rick. I mean, first of all, privatization is just a terrible idea. I mean, why take something that's currently working, self-sustaining, that pumps hundreds of millions of dollars, $500 million on an annual basis back to the general fund? Why would you possibly mess with that and at the same time abolish 5,000 good-paying family-sustaining jobs? It makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, me being the cynic that I am, Rick, when it comes to these right-wing Republicans, you know, it's nothing more than pitting unions against each other, thinking that we're going to be in the construction industry we're going to be salivating over that because, oh yeah, like, we're going to take the money from the kids and put it into the roads. We're not biting on that. That's a pitch in the dirt and we're not swinging at it.
I hope not, because I look at this, I just had to laugh because I came to the same conclusion. It's just a matter of pitting people against each other. But I got to be honest, something Republicans are very good at doing.
Yes, they are, Rick. That's why it's important for us to keep everybody accountable and honest.
And I'm glad you're here, and I appreciate your time for us. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
You got it, pal. Thank you.
Our good friend Abe Amoros, legislative director for LIUNA. Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk. It's time for war.
Facts are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together, we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hi, my name is Ethan. My dad is a sanitation worker at Republic Services. My dad spends a lot of time away from home doing the fourth most dangerous job in America, but he is invisible at work, and Republic Services does not treat him with the respect he deserves. Support us on Facebook at facebook.com/Republic Services Teamsters. Thank you.
We just had a presidential election in which an admitted tax dodger advocated lower taxes on corporations and speculators like him. And voters rejected that idea and him. Also, polls show that about 7 out of 10 Americans think corporations should pay more in taxes than they do now, and that loopholes allowing corporations to dodge their taxes should be plugged pronto. Yet, a tiny percentage of Americans, the CEOs of huge multinational corporations, are demanding that Congress do the exact opposite of what the people clearly want them to do and instead enact those special corporate tax breaks that last year's presidential loser pushed. Whose side is your member of Congress on? You'd better check, because the corporate powers are pushing furiously for a deceptive gimmick called the territorial tax. It declares that the profits of U.S. corporations can be taxed only by the territories in which they're banked. Google is one of the giants that are hot for this scheme, for it stashed 80% of its 2011 profits in Bermuda. That's $9.8 billion Google got, not from sales in Bermuda, but from customers elsewhere. Yet it banked all of the money in this tiny territory that essentially doesn't tax corporate profits. Thus, the nifty territorial tax is Google's way of paying no U.S. income tax on those profits to support the schools, police, research, transportation networks, and other public systems that allow it to flourish as an American corporation. This is Jim Hightower saying, worse, this territorial scam is an incentive for multinational corporations to ship more of their operations and jobs out of country, and to rig their books so all profits appear to be earned offshore. To learn which corporations are behind this, contact Citizens for Tax Justice, ctj.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Claustrophobia, hypochondria, xenophobia, rolled up into one. Just stay in your car, stay in mine, and we won't bother anyone. Cause I'm afraid of public transportation. Please don't get too close to me. Please don't get too close to me.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website. Or get the Stitcher app, take the program on the go for your smartphone. Again, the House Labor and Industry Committee had their votes. Two anti-prevailing wage bills. House Bill 665, which, as Abe pointed out, would change the definitions of what construction and actually is. And I love some of the things that they went into. You know, under the if they had to replace, you know, up to 3.5 inches of road service, that would be maintenance. So they're going to come down, they're going to shave off, you know, just under 3.5 inches of the road surface, repave that, not prevailing wage. No, that's maintenance. I actually thought that was fixing the road. So what you're going to see, and get ready for this, if this passes, you're going to see a lot of projects that just replace 3.25 inches of the road surface instead of redoing the road, which, understand, is going to be more costly over the long haul and more inconvenient, because every time they have to shut down the roads to repair, because you're going to have to do it more often because you're repairing. You understand this. The problem is, well, our Republican friends don't. And for them, it's about ideology. For them, it's about what they perceive as business friendly. What a handful of unscrupulous contractors want today. Because understand, and this has happened in other places, and we've had this conversation about prevailing wage in the past. I feel strongly about this. Because I believe prevailing wage makes sure that you have a local construction industry that is well-trained, well-skilled, and safe, that puts out quality work. And guess what? They live in the community. So when they put that roof on the school, their kids are actually in the building. To me, that's important. I don't know that I want fly-by-night contractors coming through, doing shoddy work, and taking the money and running, and going somewhere else with the money. There's so much to this. The reverberation effect from the decent wages that are being paid in the community, to me, is huge. And they've done study after study. Remember back when Clinton was president, they had the earthquake during the World Series that collapsed a couple bridges? There were a number of studies done on the reverberation effect of that money in the community because of prevailing wage. And they found that it magnified and actually pulled that community, pulled it up. As it's supposed to do. And that's the thing. It's supposed to provide a stable level of wages. It's supposed to foster competition based on quality and productivity, not based on who's willing to slit his neighbor's throat for a couple of pennies. And it's development of workers' skills. You know how many of the non-union contractors have these apprenticeship programs that are just abysmal failures? People who never complete them? So while we're talking about how we destroy this, how we take wages away from people, because, you know, bottom line here is, even for the people who may believe, you know what, if we do away with that, we cheat workers out of wages, it's going to bring the cost down. They've done studies on that. When Ohio did away with their prevailing wage bill for public schools, what they found, costs actually went up. Because what happened, two things happened. One, the bids didn't come down, and the contractor pocketed the difference. But two, and more importantly, you had a competition race down to the bottom. So you had bids that were so low that the contractors couldn't finish the job. So guess what happens? That's right. You have a project that's not done. So what do you have to do? Well, you got to hire somebody else who will gouge your eyes out. These are the things that we've seen time and time again. You go to Utah, where they did away with their prevailing wage law. And what happened? They lost most of their construction industry. Those people went elsewhere. These are skilled workers who can go somewhere else. And they do. And what are you left with? You're left with a transient workforce. And what do transient workforces do? They come in, they spend a tiny bit of money, and then they take that money back to their home area. And it does nothing to benefit the local community. And for me, building a new school, building a new highway, building a new hospital, building anything, not only benefits the community by having that building, that structure, that activity, but also the wages that get spent in the economy. And I look at what they're doing in California. While other states, like us, are out trying to destroy prevailing wage, California is trying to make sure that everyone abides by it. Evidently, they've got this thing called charter cities that they've set up, much like charter schools. And some of these charter cities are now saying, well, you know, we don't want to pay prevailing wage. Well, the state, Senate Bill 7, that's making its way through the legislature there, is going to prevent those charter cities from being able to skirt prevailing wages so everyone pays by the same rules. Seems smart to me. What I found interesting about the article out in California is in California, according to the Census of Construction back in 2007, they cited the average labor cost, the total labor cost of the average project in California was about 22%. So here in Pennsylvania, 9 to 13% sounds about right. California, a little bit higher cost of living, 22% Now, you hear the Tea Party think tanks saying we could save 30%, Rick. That can only happen if the people who came to work paid 8% of the cost back. Not only work for free, but actually dipped into their pocket and said, you know, we believe it so much, we're going to pay to work here. And that's business friendly. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
Today, what causes the aurora borealis or northern lights?
Some Inuit believed the spirits of their ancestors could be seen dancing in the flickering lights. In Norse mythology, the aurora was a fire bridge to the sky built by the gods.
But science tells us the aurora happens because of the sun. Storms on the sun send gusts of charged solar particles hurling across space. If Earth is in the path of the particle stream, our planet's magnetic field and atmosphere react. When the charged particles from the sun strike atoms and molecules in Earth's atmosphere, they cause them to become excited.
Atoms consist of a central nucleus and a surrounding cloud of electrons. When charged particles from the sun strike atoms in Earth's atmosphere, electrons move to higher energy orbits further away from the nucleus. Then, when an electron moves back to a lower energy orbit, the atoms release light.
And that's what causes an aurora. What happens is similar to what happens in neon signs. Electricity is used to excite the atoms and gases within the glass tubes of these signs. That's why these signs give off their brilliant colors. Oxygen causes the color green. Nitrogen causes blue or red colors. The aurora works on the same principle, but at a far more vast scale.
For more, come to EarthSky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits, BBS Benefit Solutions. can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Tell you, folks, you know, you look at this, and you look at what we've been talking about, this whole attack on prevailing wage, just part of the no rights at work agenda, in my view, the attack on unemployment compensation. Soon, get ready for it. Our state legislature is going to be going after workers' comp again. All of these assaults, all of this attack to break down conditions, to force lower wages, and in my view, much worse conditions upon working people seems to be the answer of the day for how we create jobs. If we can be like China, if we can lower wages, we can have desperation wages, that's supposedly, in the view, I guess, what's good for the country. And I remember back when Caterpillar in Canada said, hey, workforce, take a 55% pay cut or we're going to the United States. And the workers said, no, we're not going to do that. And they moved to the U.S., brought the low wages with them. I remember at the time saying, there's going to be fallout. Whoever their competitor is, they're going to be the ones who are going to feel the brunt of this, because they're going to be the ones at some point in the near future going to be shook down. Here we are. As we talked about last week, in Erie, out in the Erie area, GE Locomotive has told their workforce, going to Texas. My view, shakedown. I've got UE Local 506 President Roger Zacek on the line, the person who represents those workers out of that GE locomotive plant. Roger, thanks for taking time for me.
Pardon me?
Thanks for taking time for me.
Things are going good up here. We're trying to keep people working, and greetings.
So I look at this, and as I said, you know, back when Caterpillar came from Canada to the U.S., I remember saying, this is going to harm somebody. This is going to drag wages down for someone. How much of what GE is doing there do you think is just a shakedown to get your members to take lower wages, less benefits, and maybe extract some money from state taxpayers?
Well, there's a lot of correlation between the two, because I was up in Canada standing on the line and at their rallies with them people at the DAW, EMD plant, Caterpillar plant, whatever you want to call it, and they were fighting hard for jobs in the community, good-paying, family-sustaining union jobs in that community up there in Canada. Well, the same thing is happening here right now as it was up there. Up there, they said they're moving to Muncie, Indiana. Here, the jobs in Erie, Pennsylvania, GE has given us a transfer of work notice to moving the jobs in Fort Worth, Texas, at a, as you know, a right-to-work state, at a considerably lower wage for them people.
Question is, do you think that the plant in Texas, do you think they can actually do the work for this? Because, you know, part of me goes, you know, and the way I'm seeing this is, you know, it's a shakedown for one, but even when they do move it, if they do, you're talking about, you know, almost 1,000 jobs, I guess 950 skilled unionized workers, and I guess 100 management employees that could potentially lose their jobs?
That's correct. And if you average, you know, the average wage, just they kindly would be $60,000 times 1,000 employees. That's over $60 million lost in the community a year just by them moving the jobs to Texas. Can they do their work down there? They are already doing assembling of the products that we build up here. In Erie, we build a product basically from ground up. Down there, they're taking the parts that we built and what vendors have built, and putting the locomotives and OHV work together down there, assembling them.
Because I often wonder, you know, how is that good for business? Because we keep seeing these companies do this stuff, and then the product fails, and you have less quality, and that harms the business long term. So how much of this stuff, you know, in actual terms, on the long haul, destroys the company and harms shareholders, and especially harms taxpayers and workers?
Well, that affects Caterpillar. there are competitors as far as locomotive and mining equipment, and if you had paid attention to any news nationwide, Caterpillar's laying off. I heard 11% of their workforce is being laid off this year, gone from the workforce. And a lot of it has to be with, well, there are ups and downs in the marketplace, but their product is inferior to the point where customers really don't have the trust in buying them. Now, the product that we make, they have the trust in buying them because it's been a proven item over the years, whereas Caterpillar now is basically going to the same old product line at a new facility where skilled labor isn't readily available, but they're getting their lower wages for the people.
You know, for me, I look at this, and, you know, I look around the country where you see this beggar thy neighbor economic development. And I got to wonder how much behind the scenes, how many tax dollars from Texas are going to be going to GE, what kind of, and we'll find out down the road one way or another. But, you know, I look at this, and to me, it's economic terrorism. You know, where I live in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, Carlisle Tire and Rubber, Tire and Wheel, moved out of the state about a year and a half ago down to Tennessee for $34 million. They're tearing this building down. And I took some pictures of it, go, you know, what's the difference if someone blew that building up or if this company just abandoned it? And, you know, I look and I say the same things, because what's going to happen in Erie when those thousand workers lose their jobs and that community loses that income? What's the difference if you blew it up or they moved it out?
Well, that's a pretty good way of looking at it, but it's going to have the same effect. Only in Texas, they were kind of smart. They offered GE a whole bunch of tax credits to the tune of their firstborn child and their secondborn child, and then the government themselves and the governor helped them out by giving them incentive, kind of like a 10-year tax break. But we all know that taxes is one thing that GE doesn't need to not pay more of, because they don't pay very much at all. And it's the correlation between what you're saying and moving to Texas is a little different, in that there will be people working in the facility. However, the customer doesn't see the benefits of a lower cost for a locomotive as it is going to GE.
Right. That's a higher profit.
Doesn't see that. It's still the same price. It's like refrigerators. GE had bragged about them bringing from the Asian market back to Louisville, Kentucky, into Appliance Park, the refrigerator, side by side, very efficient, LED lighting, super thermally, very high efficient side by side refrigerators. However, the employees that are working there, making $13, maybe $14 an hour, can't even afford the products that they built. Now, I'm not saying that I don't want to buy a locomotive, but what I'm saying is that if you're going to make a product like refrigerators, you should have the people working there should have the ability to buy the same product. A locomotive is different, but as a terrorist act of sorts by them moving to Texas, not really, but it's shameful. It's a scandalous greed that the General Electric has for the wages that they're paying the employees down there in Texas, and still charging the customer the big bucks.
Yeah, and the sad reality is the net loss for the country in terms of wages for workers. And as I'm sure you've seen, corporate profit margins this year have never in the history of our country been higher, and the percentage of wages to GDP has never been lower. So all we're doing here is moving jobs somewhere else that pay lower wages. And as for a nation, as policy for the country, this is the absolute wrong direction.
I agree.
So what do we do? I understand today you guys out in Erie had a big rally. Tell me about it.
Well, today, because on April 9th, the General Electric up here gave us our transfer of work notice, and they told us about the 950 hourly union jobs and then another 100 salary jobs on top of it. Well, because of our union contract, we are permitted a 6-month notification before they do the downturn in the employment level. In that 6 months, we have the first 60 days is what we call decision bargaining, and that's when we can go through and see how much it's costing down there versus the cost up here. But I'd like to remind you that the General Electric, the transportation division of the General Electric, which we are a part of in the locomotive and mining industry up here, they were awarded the best business in all of the GE chain globally. Now, that's huge. But more importantly, in the tunes of over billions of dollars, $1 billion, over $1 billion in profit was made by the transportation division. Just ungodly amounts of money was made profit.
Roger,
the cost of the whole thing.
Yeah,
and it's greed.
Yeah, but Roger, if we made a billion, we could make $1 billion by stealing it from you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what we did was we had a big rally. The people in the plant decided enough is enough. We show support, so solidarity. We all went out, and from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, there was thousands of people outside of that plant, not just the people from workers in there, their families, community leaders, other unions throughout the whole community, businesses.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, because they're all part of it. And we have a charitable contributions. That's a huge thing. Now, General Electric is very generous to a lot of different charities, but so are the workers in there. And the workers in there, they contribute a chunk of their paycheck every week to go to what's called their Community Service Fund of General Electric employees. That money goes to many, many agencies, needy agencies throughout the county, the tri-county area, and that's going to have an effect down the road eventually again on the people in the community.
Yeah, you bring up business leaders and charitable organizations who need this stuff. You know, that's the money, and that's the money that supports the local economy. And I remember having a conversation with a local businessman here when one of the businesses was asking for just outrageous concessions. And this person telling me, well, you know, they should take that pay cut. And I had to remind him that, you know, that money that they were making, that was his money. That was the money that those workers spent in his store. So I can see, and I hope the business community in Erie is 100% behind the workers and finding a way to make sure that plant stays there.
At first, in the preliminary now, you'll find some people that feel that the greedy union workers should finally be put in their place, you know, the hand-coddled babies that are making way too much. But in reality, over years, we've been in a union, the UE, for 75 years up here in Erie. And over the years, it wasn't that GE is nice to us or they like the work we do or they're making enough money on us. We had to negotiate through several contracts to get the wages that we earn, to get the benefits that we have, to get the holidays.
So
all those things were negotiated.
Right.
And that's over decades of time. It's not just given to you.
That frame infuriates me on so many levels, because a second ago you said the company, the transportation division, made $1 billion profit. And, you know, I got to be honest, the bean counters and the CEOs, I don't think they made a penny of that. I think it's guys like you and people who work on the shop floor who actually produce the product. So this idea that, oh, there's coddled, overpaid, nonsense. These are the people who made the profit. These are the people who made that all of that possible. Just because someone made a decision at a corporate office somewhere doesn't necessarily mean that they're the ones who brought the profit in. Maybe by screwing you and your coworkers out of your wages, maybe that's how they've padded the bottom line, but you've actually produced it.
Absolutely, and it's a skill level, too. You had mentioned earlier in the program about Caterpillar. You know, when they went from Canada down into Indiana there, which recently just became a right to work state, by the way, they could not find a skill level. They could not find the skill of workers, the machinists, the welders, the wiremen, the technicians, to work efficiently at the plant to produce the product that they wanted to get out for the customer's needs. So they, in turn, offered and created down there a school for the individuals that are interested in going to that plant to learn how to build locomotives or work on the locomotives. A school that they can prepare themselves to get into the workplace, the market, for the skills necessary to build the locomotive. And that's huge, too. Right up here in this area, this is a manufacturing area that has skill levels that are just cannot be compared to any other places in the world. There are other places, don't get me wrong, we're not the very, you know, cream or...
Well, you've got a culture of it. Roger, you've got a culture of skilled tradesmen. You've got this culture. And by taking this...
generations of them.
Right. But by taking this out of there, you're going to have a brain drain, and that's going to reverberate across the entire culture. And that is a negative thing for the community and something that has to be fought back against.
That's correct.
So what can we do? Last question. How do we help? I mean, you know, here on the program, we've talked about this. We've had Representative Harkin on the program. We're going to continue to talk to folks, you know, as this continues. What can our listeners do? What can I do to help?
What you can do is letters of solidarity, support for the Erie workers up here, for the General Electric, the workers, the union workers here at the General Electric plant. That's great because they want to hear from other people that they understand that the skill level and the work that's being done in that plant by the skilled level, the union workers, is in the community, and in the community and in the state. Well, we can go to our politicians, like you had mentioned, Harkins, and talk to them about doing something. But as far as tax breaks, again, General Electric doesn't pay very much in taxes. So what you can do is letters of solidarity, tell your senators, we have a couple of them in the state here, mention to them that it would be good to keep the good, skilled, high-paying union jobs, family-sustaining jobs in Pennsylvania, and rally with us.
Take to the streets.
Give us your strength.
Take to the streets. I'd love to know. I want to know when your next rally is. We'd love to come out and participate in it.
You got it.
I appreciate the time, Roger.
Okay, thank you.
Roger Zajac, president of UE Local 506. Quick break, right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Mr. Pep and dig it, Mr. Harlequin Hauler, because I'm going to leave it in the ground. Mr. Tap and dig it, Mr. Harlequin Hauler, Mr. Reagan can supervise the crew. And if they find it too hard, they got the National Guard to fix the bayonets and shovel like fools. He's going to take a lot of long and an 80-short day for this miner to cool on down. This Pep can dig it, Mr. Harley can haul it, because I'm going to leave it in the ground.
Razor Tattoos presents Get On Board, an art show to benefit autism. Get On Board features custom, one-of-a-kind artwork on skateboard decks from nationally renowned tattoo artists and fine artists. All proceeds go directly to the Autism Society, Greater Harrisburg area. The initial public showing will be during the Derby Inc. Invitational Tattoo Convention at the Farm Show Complex, April 19th through 21st. Visit facebook.com/getonboardforautism. That's facebook.com/getonboardforautism. Sponsored by Razor Tattoos.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
On July 5, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations in industry." Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, I look at this, and you know, again, you go back, and it's not that I'm clairvoyant, it's not that I'm some genius. I pay attention, and when I saw that Caterpillar situation, I said, you know what? This is that all albatross. This is that weight. This is pulling us down. This is that race to the bottom. This is what they want us competing on. Who's going to work for less? It's that simple. And like he said, you know, they moved to Indiana. And if I remember the big announcement, oh, we just passed right to work. And we brought these people from Canada, a pretty heavily unionized country. We stole them away. Because we're willing to let our workers work for less. We're willing to exploit our people. And, you know, that's really, I have to ask, is that the kind of place you want to live in? Is that the country? Because now it's these workers over here. It's the locomotive workers. It's these electricians and welders and machinists. And what's those people? Who's next? Because they keep saying, look, folks, we're all in the shark tank. And eventually the shark's going to come for us. You know, you go back to that, you know, the Pastor Niemöller quote. You know, first they came for the communists and I said nothing. Then they came for the trade unionists and I said nothing. And by the time they came for me, there was nobody left. It's the same exact thing. If we're going to allow wages in one industry to continue to fall, eventually that goes into another industry and into another until eventually, well, we're all broke. And you look at the last 30, 40 years, what's gone on is as you've seen deindustrialization through globalization, as you've seen privatization take over the commons, what we used to do for ourselves, as you've seen union density being attacked and laws being used against workers to organize, what you've seen is you've seen wages go down and profits go up. And I point to a very simple fact. I mean, it is exactly what it is. The margin of profit has never been higher in this country. And the wage rate, the wages as a percentage of GDP has never been lower. There is definitely a cause and effect there. Definitely a redistribution of wealth. And, you know, at the end of this, you have to ask the question, is this the country we want to live in? And I remember going back to, you know, when I first started working in the trucking industry. I was making $15 an hour back in the late 80s. Doing the exact same job right now, they're making $11.90 an hour. And some places less than that. There's something wrong with that model. And it's this whole race to the bottom. So I don't care what job you do today. I don't care what it is. Eventually, you're going to be affected by it. So either we have an economy that's moving forward and spiraling upwards, or we have one that is lagging behind and spiraling down. And the sad reality is, since the Bush recession of 2008, we have seen a terminal velocity free fall to the bottom. And we've got to stand up and fight back and say absolutely no more. And we got to come together, which is why I'm looking forward to our big bus tour over the summer to have these conversations. I'm looking forward to it. And again, if you missed any portion of the program thus far, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you get the podcast. Stitcher for your smartphone. Quick break. Back with hour three. Stick around.
Just go me. Call back anytime. Have already had no time. You've been so way back. con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters Local 728 sanitation workers are on strike in Georgia against Republic Services Allied Waste. The union says it's an unfair labor practices strike to protest the company's violation of federal labor law. The workers are trying to get their first collective bargaining contract. Jamar Branch says that since a merger, he and other workers work longer hours, do more work, and had their pay cut. He says Republic Services Allied Waste isn't respecting workers.
You know, I'm standing up for what I believe is right, and I'm willing to stand on it, as long as it takes, whatever it takes. For me, myself, and my fellow employees, I would like to see other men, workers, get treated fairly and at least get paid the same as other Republic workers.
From the Teamsters picket line in McDonough, Georgia, Hugh Vampel says the company isn't respecting its workers and isn't acknowledging the struggle for dignity and respect for sanitation workers that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. died defending.
I'm proud that we're doing what we're doing at this point, and if there's anybody or any other corporation that's having the same or similar situation, that they have to stand up for what they believe in. I mean, it's a good thing as far as your family, your kids. It's the right thing to do, and never let any organization really make you feel less than the man that you are.
The Blue-Green Alliance Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference kicks off in Washington, D.C. today. The alliance consists of environmental, labor, and science groups. The conference will look at climate change issues and how that impacts infrastructure rebuilding, how to build a truly green future while providing the needed good jobs, the American Green Manufacturing Renaissance, and how to make the Blue-Green Labor Environmental Alliance actually work on the ground to advance a green economic future for America. The House is scheduled to vote on Republican-penned legislation which could see federal workers terminated if they have a tax lien with the federal government. Jesse Russell reports.
The Federal Employee Tax Accountability Act also requires prospective employees to certify that they have no delinquent tax debt. Federal employees with tax debt has been on the rise since the start of the recession, and it jumped significantly in 2011, the same year a federal pay freeze kicked in. That pay freeze was recently extended for a third year. It also comes on top of hundreds of thousands of federal employees, possibly facing a pay cut as high as 20% due to furloughs triggered by sequester cuts. According to numbers released by the Internal Revenue Service, federal workers have a delinquency rate of 3.2%. The delinquency rate for non-federal workers in the United States is 8.2%. The number of tax delinquencies among employees of the House of Representatives is above average at 3.7%. According to the Washington Post, additional data from the IRS show that only 0.4% of federal employees currently have tax liens.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, at a time when we're talking about cutting investments to public education, and for the last couple of years we've seen investment in education down considerably here in Pennsylvania, 20,000 education professionals kicked to the curb. And some say, well, they lost their job. No, they didn't lose it. They know where it is. It was stolen from them. It was taken from them. No more of this, oh, I lost my... No, it was taken. So I see this story about George W. Bush who... the big headline, he has a new hobby, he likes to paint, because he takes a great deal of delight in bursting stereotypes. Like he's a smart guy. But he told the Dallas Morning News that people are surprised. He says, of course, some people are surprised I can even read. I don't doubt that he can read. I don't think that he does. That's the difference. You know, I never questioned his ability to actually do that. I mean, when you have the kind of money to get the best education money can buy, you should at least be able to at the minimum be able to read my pet goat, even if it is upside down. Just a thought. $500 million he raised for the library with pop-up books. No looking fines, though. Evidently was not very good at looking fine. More good news, if you like people who get awards for, questionable. Former Senator Dick Lugar, the Republican from Indiana, former chairman of the Senate Finance, Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He's going to be, I guess he's been knighted. Knighted. Does that bother you? He's going to be an honorary knight commander of the most excellent order of the British Empire. A lot of other folks have been knighted. Paul McCartney, Elton John, a whole bunch of people like that. And I was telling someone, and they said, John Lennon was knighted. And I go, no, I think he turned that back. I think he said no. He was upset about the Vietnam War and some other conflicts. And also that, the album Cold Turkey had fallen to the charts, turned it back. And the part of this that gets me is, Elton John and Paul McCartney, they're actually British citizens. What's Lugie doing being knighted? Just a thought. What they're saying is that it's all because of his legislative time where he was part of the Nunn-Lugar Cooperative Threat Reduction Program that secured and eliminated some 7,600 nuclear warheads after the end of the Cold War. There have been a couple other Americans who have been knighted, Dwight Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan, and George H.W. Bush all have been knighted. Interesting thought I had as I was listening to the commercials coming in, this idea that Obama's a socialist, and I was thinking about the Judd Gregg thing, who was saying, it's a wonderful thing. He's going to put chain CPI and going to go after entitlements, and then we can open the door. Because understand, it's my view, once you open that door, the Republicans will kick it off the freaking hinges. And you can kiss Medicare and Social Security and all that stuff. You can kiss it goodbye. Once you crack that door open, for me, I look around the world and I look at countries like Canada and I look at places like Israel and I look at other industrialized countries that are saying, you know what, we need to be expanding the safety net under people's feet, not making it worse. In Canada, they're actually expanding their pension system to make sure that people have a stronger footing under them. We're talking about taking benefits away. And you go, well, how's this happening? And, I was thinking about this frame of Obama being this grand socialist. And I wonder if people actually who say that actually know what a socialist is. I look at the things that Obama has put forth to change CPI. I look at, to me, a huge one. The fact that in his 2014 budget, which the more we learn about this budget, the more you go, geez. Baby bathwater pitched out kind of makes evidently in the budget Obama is proposing to look into selling off the Tennessee Valley Authority. By selling this power company that benefits people from Virginia to Mississippi, some 9 million customers in 7 states. By selling this, he claims it's going to put us on a sustainable path. Going to try and sell it for $25 billion, at least. Now, we don't know what kind of money you're going to get for it. And it kind of reminded me of what Corbett is saying here in Pennsylvania. We sell off the wine and spirit shops. Then we can, we can fund education. And then you got other Republicans going, no, we can't fund education. Can't fund education. Let's use it for roads and bridges. And I got to be honest. When I heard you put chain CPI in there and you put in selling off the Tennessee Valley Authority, I just heard. It's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to scream. Because, look, to me, those are key elements of where we need to be going. The conversation needs to be had of public investment in these areas. And I look at what corporate, and it's, again, going back to the two very different world views, that nothing can be in the hands of we the people, nothing can be in the hands of us, nothing can be the commons and good for the common good, can't be. Everything's got to be for profit, profit motive. And you look at the Tennessee Valley Authority, which has worked marvelously from conception till today. What I find hysterical and what I find just amazing, that Democrats are horrible at politics. Whenever they try to scheme and say, okay, we're going to put this stuff on the table and we're going to talk about how it bites them right in the derriere. Because what do you think happened? Obama puts it in the 2014 budget. We're going to sell off the Tennessee Valley Authority. We're going to privatize like Republicans want. We're going to do what the GOME wants to do. We're going to give in. We surrender. We're going to put this on the chopping block. Let's auction it off. You know, like they want to do here in Pennsylvania, to the lottery, to the wine and spirit shops, eventually to the turnpike. You name it. They want to sell it off. Fire sale. What do you think happens? What do you think happens? Well, you got Lamar Alexander coming out saying, well, it's one more bad idea in the budget full of bad ideas. You've now got Republicans coming out and going, no, we like the government-owned power company. We want to defend it from the very bad ideas that that man has, according to John Duncan, Republican from Tennessee. No, we want to make sure that we keep it for our citizens. Because you know what? People in those states, they like it. Don't really know that it's government run. They know that they get reliable power and reasonable. But that's, and they get jobs, good jobs. They like it. And I find it just hysterical that Democrats continue to fall into that trap. Because they're bad at politics. They're bad at playing the game. And when they try to play the game and when they try to do what Republicans do, they lose. Because Republicans are good at campaigning, they're good at propaganda, they're good at division, and they're good at the game. They suck at governing. They're horrible at governing. Look at the last 2 years here in Pennsylvania. Can you say anything has been done? Haven't had a transportation bill in 2.5 years. Roads and bridges aren't getting repaired and fixed. We have no investment in the future, but they're winning at the game. Because every day they got their sound bites. Every day they've got their division. Every day they're pitting people against each other. And every day, well, every day they're stealing from us. And I look at this and I go, you know, this is why you have to stand on principle. And I look at this whole chain CPI thing. And I think, as Andy pointed out in his email to me, that George Lakoff has the right idea on Social Security and on Medicare. They're insurance programs. We paid the premiums. We demand the payment for them. It's like any insurance program. It's any time you paid premiums into something, you have a contract. You expect it to go as agreed to, and you expect no changes in it. So, therefore, no chain CPI. And, you know, as I talked about earlier with Judd Gregg, his piece, well, you know, and this is how they see it. The chain CPI is not a huge amount. It's a big cut down the road. I'm going to get screwed in 20 and 30 years. Absolutely, Greg is right. But this is just cracking the door open. This is just pushing that door open to make sure that, well, the rest of it is on the table. And what I love is you paid the premiums for these insurance programs, for these anti-poverty insurance programs. You paid the freight. And now they want to call them entitlements. It's an entitlement. We can, just as easily as we gave it to you, we can take it away. What I like, what I find amazing, is all of them, both political parties, have told seniors who are collecting it today, don't worry, it's not about you. You're going to be taken care of. You just keep voting the way you did. And they hope that you and me and other people who are 20, 30, 40 years away from retirement, they're hoping we have amnesia and we forget. And the reality is, I'm not going to forget. I'm flipping mad. Now, understand, it's not going to pass. But the mere fact that this is on the table, the mere fact that they're offering to sell off the Tennessee Valley Authority, the mere fact that we're moving away, the Democrats are moving away from the whole small d democracy, the whole idea of we're in this together, and there are things that we control for ourselves, worries me. It worries me that we're moving away from the commons. We used to believe that we could own our own utilities. We used to believe we could own our own banks. Now we seem to believe that, well, only the profiteers can do that. Something fundamentally wrong about that. Just something fundamentally wrong. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get The Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
We just had a presidential election in which an admitted tax dodger advocated lower taxes on corporations and speculators like him, and voters rejected that idea and him. Also, polls show that about 7 out of 10 Americans think corporations should pay more in taxes than they do now, and that loopholes allowing corporations to dodge their taxes should be plugged pronto. Yet, a tiny percentage of Americans, the CEOs of huge multinational corporations, are demanding that Congress do the exact opposite of what the people clearly want them to do and instead enact those special corporate tax breaks that last year's presidential loser pushed. Whose side is your member of Congress on? You'd better check, because the corporate powers are pushing furiously for a deceptive gimmick called the territorial tax. It declares that the profits of U.S. corporations can be taxed only by the territories in which they're banked. Google is one of the giants that are hot for this scheme, for it stashed 80% of its 2011 profits in Bermuda. That's $9.8 billion Google got, not from sales in Bermuda, but from customers elsewhere. Yet it banked all of the money in this tiny territory that essentially doesn't tax corporate profits. Thus, the nifty territorial tax is Google's way of paying no U.S. income tax on those profits to support the schools, police, research, transportation networks, and other public systems that allow it to flourish as an American corporation. This is Jim Hightower saying, worse, this territorial scam is an incentive for multinational corporations to shift more of their operations and jobs out of country, and to rig their books so all profits appear to be earned offshore. To learn which corporations are behind this, contact Citizens for Tax Justice, ctj.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. A new report out from the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, they point out that corporations, yes, our corporate friends, received $181 billion in tax breaks in 2012. We gave them $181 billion in tax breaks. Yay! Are we happy? What's interesting is that's almost exactly the amount that they paid in taxes. So as a net, and you think about this for a second, much like the job thing that we talked about with Roger from UE out about GE Locomotive, how across the country, you know, maybe we didn't lose any jobs. The wages went down because you're moving those jobs from Erie that paid a decent union wage, that family sustaining wage, down to Texas that you're going to pay $10 an hour probably. You didn't lose jobs as a nation, but you lost wages as a nation. It's redistribution of wealth. The wealth going from the workers to the corporations. Same thing here. All of the corporations in the country that paid, you know, these taxes, guess what? Zero sum game. So you look at the question you got to have then is, you know, who benefited? Well, of course, who benefited are the big multinationals. And how did it happen? Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, you go back to the part of the law in 2008 that was enacted that allowed corporations to write off 100% of their capital expenses. You look at, you know, Governor Corbett saying, you know, you can give, you know, all of your depreciation right up front. It's a loss of tax revenue over the long haul. Well, same basic thing on the federal level. So we said, go ahead, yeah, take all of it, 100% write off. And then there's the overseas hiding of money in the tax havens. You look at, you know, some of the largest corporations in this country, these big multinationals, these American companies, holding about $1.5 trillion in these tax havens. The Bermudas, the Caymans, Luxembourg, you know, the Jersey, of the Isle of Jersey. Basically the Delaware loophole of the world. And they're hiding it there. Because they think, hey, eventually we can strong arm the U.S. into letting us bring it back. Tax free, of course. You've heard it. Repatriation. Let us repatriate the money and we'll create jobs. Didn't happen the last time. Oh, trust us. Next time will be better. Uh-huh. And you look at the reforms that the Republicans and their lobbyist buddies are pushing for, and like we talked about, it's the territorial tax. And the whole idea is you would then exempt pretty much most corporations who do business in the U.S., you'd exempt them from tax completely. Now think about this for a second, because this is what blows my mind. Again, highest profit margin in history. Workers get the lowest percentage of GDP and wages in history. The U.S. collected less tax revenue as a percentage of the economy than all but one of the industrialized countries. So you hear this, oh, but we have the highest tax rate in the world, Rick. We need to have forgiveness for the employers, for the big businesses, because they're going to use that money to create jobs. Wrong. You look at the reality. In 2011, the corporate tax rates, the amount of money that we bring in on corporate taxes, fell to a 40-year low. Profits, again, never higher. So you stop and you think about this, and you go back to what Judd Gregg said about business people deciding to use money to avoid paying taxes instead of using it for productive means. And his argument is that there should be no taxes on business, and we should let them make as much money as they can so they can hoard. And they can use the infrastructure that you and I pay for, they can use the education system that you and I pay for, and they can use our court systems, and they can use our natural resources and all of that stuff free of charge. Because they're so wonderful and we just love them so much. And they give us things. There's a report put out by the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. Pointed out that this tax avoidance stuff, this tax dodging by corporations, costs the average taxpayer in this country over $1,000 a year. So I go back and I think about this because, you know, I remember my Tea Party friend saying, Rick, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. This, my friends, this is redistribution of wealth. This is taking from you and me and all the other working people through a whole bunch of means. Lower wages, higher tax rates that we pay, and, of course, big handouts to these big multinationals. Because I go back to how I started this, which is it's a zero-sum game on the tax. We gave out $181 billion in tax breaks, which was about what corporate America paid in taxes. The question is that redistributive mechanism in there? Who got the big money? Well, I would argue the people who got the big money are the people who had the high-priced lobbyists, who got themselves the loopholes. Mom and pop on the corner, the small local manufacturer, not so much. And I think about all of the policy on the state level, on the federal level, all of this policy push towards bigger, all of this policy push towards making sure the big guy wins and the little guy gets screwed. You know, I think a perfect example of that is the liquor privatization scheme that our governor is pushing through. Who do you think benefits from selling off the state wine and spirit shops? It's not the workers, because 5,000 workers are going to lose their jobs. We know that. And we're told, well, they'd be the first one hired at the new jobs. Well, there'll be no new jobs because liquor is just going to be another item on the shelves. Governor Corbett himself said, you know, when he goes to South Carolina, they put beer on one side of the store and wine and liquor on the other side of the store. And he came up with the brilliant deduction and figured this one out all by himself, probably, that the reason they put it on opposite ends of the store, because when you want to go for your liquor, you might want to have chips too. So they make you walk from the beer aisle to the booze aisle, and they put the chips in between. He figured that one out all by himself. And good for him. I mean, he is governor, after all. I hope he figures that one out on himself. But I look at this and I go, you know, who benefits? Well, who benefits is going to be the big chains, the big grocery stores, the big box retailers, the big gas station chains, the big, you know, mini mart chains. Those are the people who are going to benefit. It's not going to create a job. What it's going to do is put another item on a shelf. But it's also going to help the media structure, going to help the newspapers and the radios and the TV, because they're going to be advertising like crazy. Because, of course, if you got, you know, two stores next to each other selling booze, you're going to have to advertise saying, hey, don't buy it from them, buy it from us. We've got chips. And what I love is you get these groups who make up these euphemistic names. Oh, we believe Americans who love puppies and nonsense. I was reading an article today that cited a group in Maryland, because Maryland is trying to get six packs and beer in the chain stores. There's a push there. They want to have it everywhere. They want to saturate the state of Maryland with booze. But what I found hysterical is there's a group in Maryland, and you got to wonder if it's actually a group, or if it's just a bunch of corporations who assign people. And if you look at their board of directors, it's all CEO types for pretty good-sized businesses. The group's name is Marylanders for Better Beer and Wine Laws. Not really a good name, but I gotta ask, would you join? If I start a group called Pennsylvanians for Better Beer and Wine Laws, would you get 25,000 members across the state? I don't think so. So I look at that number because I went to the website. The website said 20,000. So from the time I looked at the website, the time I saw the article, they gained 5,000 people. Stop and think about it. It's the big money behind all this stuff. Because who benefits from here in Pennsylvania from selling the wine and spirit shops? Is it you or me? No. Are we going to have more convenience? Maybe a little bit. We're going to get a handful of items that we can choose from, and it's going to be everywhere. They will saturate our society with booze, and some may want that. Most people don't. Most people want it to be accessible, but for rational adults who know how to use those things somewhat responsibly, I guess as responsibly as you can. But it's interesting to me that you look at this stuff and it's all the same people who seem to be benefiting. It's never the workers. It's never you and me. That's always the handful. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back and talk with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back.
A boy with a gun. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Awesome. Things being done in the House today. And in fact, the Republicans put forth a bill, the Federal Employee Tax Accountability Act, passed by a vote of 250-159. Didn't pass because you needed two-thirds majority to pass it. But, here again, another one of those opportunities to keep going after the workers. We're gonna go after those federal employees because if they're delinquent on their taxes, and look, anybody who's delinquent, we should be going after, but not to take their jobs away and not fire them. And when Congress cleans up their own house, maybe going after some people who maybe owe back child support, maybe, just a thought. $100,000+ Joe Walsh still owes, I guess, to his ex-wife while he was in Congress. I got a problem with that. Also, they got some other things accomplished. They passed the GOA Improvement Act, 408-0, going to make sure that the GAO gets some information from government, which I actually thought that they did. Very, very bizarre stuff. Also, on the Senate side, they passed a resolution honoring the recently deceased Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and not a second too soon, as the article points out, now just in time for her funeral tomorrow. So couldn't have buried her without the resolution. Anyway, here to tell us what's going on in D.C. and around the world, I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you very much.
So we can now officially bury Margaret Thatcher.
Yes, and there are going to be some strange people at it.
and including two Republican women.
Michelle Bachmann.
That's right. Thank you for helping me with that. Yes.
Yeah, was that a joke? I mean, there's part of me that goes, was Boehner, you know, kind of playing a joke?
No, I think he thinks that, you know, he's sending his own Iron Ladies.
Okay. As crazy as she is.
Yes.
I got to be honest, I love Michelle Bachmann, because I've always been attracted to crazy, and right there it is. And it's, so, there you go. Anyway, but I look at this federal Employee Tax Accountability Act that, you know, if they owe back taxes, we're going to fire them. How are you going to get tax money out of if you fire them? And, you know, I keep asking the question, you know, you've cut their pay, you know, 20% for the rest of this fiscal year, and they've had a pay freeze for several years. What do you expect?
Well, that's exactly right. And unfortunately, you're going to get a situation where you're not going to get taxes and you're going to have people on the public dole. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, the right loves attacking federal workers, and I just don't get it. You know, because I looked this up. Is this a huge problem? And they say, well, there's $1 billion. You know, all the federal employees, they owe about $1 billion, which is a lot of money. But when I looked up the delinquency rate for federal employees, it's less than half what the national rate is. So I mean, we're not talking about people who are you know, the dregs of society or pulling. It just seems to me to be another assault on federal workers and workers as a whole.
That's right. I think, look, the problem is this is a Congress that is going to go after workers in whatever way they possibly can. Just how it is.
Yeah, and, you know, this whole neutering of the National Labor Relations Board, which is destroying labor relations in this country, because at the end of it, when something does get done, you've got all these employers.
Well, they appointed two Republicans so it would get through, but give me a break.
You know, but, you know, the thing is, you know, once you give one side so much power, you're eventually going to tick off the other side. You're going to really screw up labor management relations for decades to come.
Yes, and that is, I mean, honestly, I don't even know what to say except for the fact that it's better to have some relations board, as they have said, but I'm not so sure I agree with that.
Yeah. So let's get to what's going on. The big story all day today, and if you've watched any of the news channels, which to me has just been nauseating, the coverage of this explosion, how frame by frame, there's a bag here, and watch it, this explosion. And to me, I got to be honest, I don't want to see the bodies. I don't want to see the blood and the gore. I want to catch the person who did it, but I don't want to see all the blood and the gore.
Well, unfortunately, blood and gore sells, you know, as they say about the 11 p.m. news, if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
So, right? I mean, that's unfortunately what it is.
So what do we know at this point?
What we know is that there was a bomb that was detonated, or two bombs, that they found the motherboard, they think, that detonated it. They have absolutely no clue as to who did it. This Saudi national cooperated with them, and I guess they took all the stuff out of the roommates and looked at it and didn't find anything. So so they're back to square one. The president will be speaking there on
tomorrow, I guess, or Thursday.
Thursday,
I believe.
Right.
So that should screw up transportation for the whole day.
Right.
Because, you know, all across the country, you're seeing this lockdown. I saw, you know, I saw McConnell going out, well, you know, Americans have been complacent about terrorism. No, it's called living our lives. I mean, at some point you go, okay, this stuff is possible. We're not going to live in fear, and I don't want checkpoints at every corner if I'm turning the corner. Steve King was talking about, well, you know, he said that there's some speculation that it was a foreign national, and a foreign national was here on a student visa. He was talking about, you know, background checks. He goes, if we can't check the Saudis coming, how are we going to check everybody else? Which, again, to me, seems to be using this in the absolute wrong way.
Well, that's right. Look, there have been so many people jumping this gun, and it's just wrong. I mean, we have to focus on safety, and that is really primarily what we need to do.
Yeah, but you know,
and let the FBI do their thing.
Yeah, look, they're going to find who it is. I mean, there's so many. You know, I was talking to someone today, and I go, look, they probably already got an idea of who it is. There's so many cameras that have been trained on that. The police departments, they videotape every square inch of that. They know every person who was there. Eventually, they will put the resource into finding that person.
That is what is going to happen. The FBI is the group that is taking it on.
Yeah, I mean, but there are so many video, you know, with everybody having a cell phone and everybody, they're going to find who put those bags down.
That's what I think.
And what's
by the way, if you know anything, you can call 1-800, call FBI.
Right. But you know, one of the things that gets me is, you know, you saw a flashing on the news when I was at lunch today, you know, be suspicious of people carrying large, heavy bags. And I'm going, is that what we've come to? You know, I see we're near a train station. I see military people getting off the train with large, heavy bags. Should I now be afraid of them?
Well, I mean, that's the issue of where terror really comes in, because it terrifies people.
And that's
you have people that, you know, get anxious about this kind of thing. And I think that's why the president is going up to Boston, because his presence often helps people without anxiety.
Yeah. And well, the thing is you listen to the Texas Attorney General, a guy named Greg Abbott, Obama is a terrorist, because evidently he's worse than Kim Jong Il.
These people are crazy.
he said it today. He told people there that the threat to the Texas was greater than those from the North Korean leader. It was the Democrats. They're much worse because Obama's a socialist.
Right. Crazy.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing.
Who's that talk show host that's saying all these crazy things?
All of them? Most of them?
No, but there's that really crazy one.
There's Alex Jones.
That's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a bunch of them. The Michael Savages. They're all of the far-out ones.
Right.
Who just love to fear-monger. And look, you know, fear sells. You get that anger, and you're pointing your finger at that guy who looks different. That stuff sells.
Right.
And because when I first saw this happen, I go, you know, I'll bet you it's going to be some guy who's just ticked off that last year tripped him and he didn't finish, or he skinned his knee last year. It's going to be something, in my view, really kind of stupid. Like this letter, I guess. And we're going to have to go through checking our mail again. Some idiot sent what ricin or God knows what.
Right. It looks like ricin.
So back to checking the mail again. All because some crackpot got it in their head. I want to cause mayhem.
What can I say?
Well,
there's nothing I can say.
There really isn't. I mean, and it comes back to, at these times, we have to be more ever vigilant to, you know, because I remember after 9/11 when they passed the Patriot Act, and I remember going to a forum put on by the League of Women Voters where they were talking about the Patriot Act. And you had three people on the panel who were for it, three people who were on the panel who were against it. Guess who actually read the bill? Obviously, the people who were against it actually read it. The people who were in favor of it, they got the talking points. I just want to feel safe. I just want our communities to be safer. And the other people are talking, well, wait a second. This is a change of our entire way of life. And when these things happen, you know, there's that, well, let's lock everything down and strip searches at every corner. And, you know, as I've been saying about flying, we should just fly naked. It would make life so much easier. We wouldn't have to go through security checks. And, you know, in fact, I just read something the other day, actually making the bathroom smaller. So they should just, everybody fly naked and each seat be its own little bathroom. Life would be so much easier.
Yeah, but then people would do terrible things in those bathrooms.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're right there in front of everybody. Yeah.
That's right.
Just a weird thought. But who was the guy who got the ricin?
It was, in fact, somebody I know quite well, Senator Wicker from Mississippi. His sister is a dear friend of mine and comes to South Sudan with us.
And why would, you know, any speculation of why this guy would be the target of this? the guns thing, maybe? Any speculation at all? Anybody talking about? Because I don't know. I'm asking.
None so far.
So maybe we'll find out in the next day or two.
Right.
Let's move on to the immigration issue. I guess that bill is going to be coming out in the very near future?
Yes. The immigration bill is going to be coming. It's being dropped tonight. Senators McCain and Schumer met with the president today.
That'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Also, the White House is looking at vetoing this CISPA cyber bill.
That's right. I think they really are very, very concerned. I think that they're really worried that it is government overreach, which it is.
Yeah, good to see at least there's something someone agrees on at some point. And also, finally, the FAA, I don't know if you saw, the FAA shut down the American Airlines flights for some time this afternoon.
That's right.
What was the problem?
It looked like their computer system went, and of course, as you know, that is where they're able to do a check to see if anybody's a terrorist, all that kind of thing. And so I guess they felt that they weren't going to be able to control what's going on.
Now, could this have been a cyber attack from the Chinese?
I don't know. But by the way, speaking of the Chinese, the third woman was a Boston University graduate student. She was from China.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
One of the other women
right.
who was killed was actually the daughter of a Unite Here member, a union member in that area.
Right.
And our thoughts and our prayers go out to those folks and the people who are injured, and the hope that, you know, the healing begins and the community mends and we move forward.
Would be nice.
You know, when this kind of stuff happens, you just go, you know, what exactly possesses someone to do something insane like this?
Right. That's why I think I'd like to put everybody's brain who commits violence under a scanner.
Yeah, well, there you go. Ellen, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Earth, sky.
Today, what causes the aurora borealis or northern lights?
Some Inuit believed the spirits of their ancestors could be seen dancing in the flickering lights. In Norse mythology, the aurora was a fire bridge to the sky built by the gods.
But science tells us the aurora happens because of the sun. Storms on the sun send gusts of charged solar particles hurling across space. If Earth is in the path of the particle stream, our planet's magnetic field and atmosphere react. When the charged particles from the sun strike atoms and molecules in Earth's atmosphere, they cause them to become excited.
Atoms consist of a central nucleus and a surrounding cloud of electrons. When charged particles from the sun strike atoms in Earth's atmosphere, electrons move to higher energy orbits further away from the nucleus. Then, when an electron moves back to a lower energy orbit, the atoms release light.
And that's what causes an aurora. What happens is similar to what happens in neon signs. Electricity is used to excite the atoms and gases within the glass tubes of these signs. That's why these signs give off their brilliant colors. Oxygen causes the color green. Nitrogen causes blue or red colors. The aurora works on the same principle, but at a far more vast scale.
For more, come to EarthSky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Earth, sky.
Today.
If you take what I would call a reasonable scientific approach to that, we believe those consequences are manageable. They do require us to begin to exert or spend more policy effort on adaptation. And as human beings, as a species, that's why we're all still here. We have spent our entire existence adapting. Okay, so we will adapt to this.
Share the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there from the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on you go. So big news. As you know, Mark Sanford, former Republican governor of South Carolina, Mr. Appalachian Trail. I guess he didn't realize that the Appalachian Trail it goes a long way here in the U.S., doesn't quite make it all the way down to Argentina. Now the trail, unless you're talking about another woman maybe that was his pet name. Maybe Appalachian Trail was his pet name for his mistress. I don't know. He's running for Congress against Stephen Colbert or Stephen Colbert's sister, actually running a little bit ahead of Elizabeth Colbert Bush. May 7th, the big day where we'll find out if Mark Sanford has a political career or not. Running for the first congressional district, something he held for, 6 years in the 90s. Turns out, just broke, that Mark's going to, on May 9th, going to be in court to answer charges that, he was trespassing in his ex-wife's house. Now, part of the divorce settlement is that, Mark just can't go walking into her house. Seems kind of rational. I think about my ex-wife. I don't walk into her house. She doesn't walk into mine. Kind of a good thing, I guess. Mark didn't see it that way. Thought, come and go as he pleases. In fact, according to the report, he had been in and out of the house a number of times, and each time, his ex-wife says, "Hey, I don't want you here, and I don't want you around. You are no good. You know what?" I'm sure came with it. He showed up again, so she had filed a complaint. So he, think about this for a second. Could be elected to Congress. 2 days after that, could be going to jail. Wow. Kind of makes you just shake your head. And you got to wonder, because if you remember, I think it was back August last year. I think it was August last year. He proposed to Appalachian Trail that he was going to be married. In fact, on the Wikipedia page I just looked up, they're called domestic partners now. Gotta wonder what he was doing at the ex-wife's house. And if you're Appalachian Trail, are you not worrying? Are you not wondering, given the track record? Just a thought. A couple of emails I got during the break, kind of threw some ideas out there for me. One writes, "Why not knighthood for Dick Lugard?" Says our senators work for the global economy to destroy the working class, to crush the 99%, fits right in with the Thatcher model of no commitment to a community or society. Isn't that what the monarchy has always wanted? A two-tier society. You're either rich or you're poor. Now, actually, that's a perfect analogy. And he points out, Senator Dick Lugar delivered, we now have the rich and the poor, no in-betweens, just like good monarchists would strive to deliver. An Anglo-neoliberal paradise. He deserves it. So does the majority of our Senate. They did what King George could never do, to change our republic to a monarchy run by the elite rich. I can't argue much about that. Got another email during the break. Rick, don't you think calling it economic terrorism is a bit over the top? No. Simply put, big stock market drop. Everybody paying attention today. Yesterday kind of made me go good. Put all the money into gold. All the people who doomsdayers. Today I expected a little rise. Because people think, hey, it bottomed out. Now's the time to get in. More suckers' money. I seem to believe. Good news. Across the country. In New York State, education officials have been sounding the alarms for months that, you know, because of this Common Core that's coming online. Common Core was adopted in 2010 in New York. It's coming to Pennsylvania, I understand. It's going to happen. It's going to make these standardized tests that much harder. You've already got a good number of schools who can't pass these. The next series are going to be that much harder. You know, just like Pennsylvania, New York tests students grades third grade through eighth grade. You spend all these hours studying just for the test. And with the Common Core standards coming online, look, at the end of the day, it's a rigged game. It's a failed game. And as some of the people are saying, why do I want to put my kids through this? Why do I want to go through this? And as one of the people quoted in the article says, this is surely education malpractice. He said you could also call it child abuse. And he said, look, we know our rights as parents, and we have an obligation to protect our kids. And I'm with you. Absolutely with you. I chose myself. Tomorrow we're going to try and talk to some folks on this because I think this is an important issue. Under the guise of waste, fraud, and abuse, it's another waste of our tax dollars. It's another wasted day of studying for something that I don't know. I don't believe measures in any accurate way. Intelligence measured in any accurate way. Learning in any accurate way. Teacher performance. I'm just not seeing it. And what I see it as is an absolute ripoff of tax dollars, an absolute ripoff of, education. And it just is exactly what it is. Anyway, today is another somber day, the sixth anniversary of what happened at Virginia Tech. Sixth anniversary. You go, man, it just seems like yesterday. You know, all of these things just seem to kind of be going together. And, you know, it's times like today that, you know, you sit back and you reflect on all of this stuff. You know, talking about, you know, Oklahoma City, which was, you know, on the same day that the bombing yesterday. Same thing with Waco. And you look at all this stuff and you go, What's wrong with some of society? I don't know. You know, it is what it is. Anyway, over the coming days, we're going to talk about the big news has been, you know, we're going to be losing jobs because of Obamacare and all of the threats because of Obamacare. And, you know, what caught my attention today, and I go back to this idea that Republicans play the game much better. They're much better at the politics, at the messaging, at the bumper sticker, sloganeering, much better at that stuff. So in Obama's budget, and what Obama's done is he's going to suspend the program for pre-existing conditions, the pre-existing condition insurance plan, because it hasn't been fully implemented. And the money isn't there. That's going to have to wait until the Affordable Care Act is fully implemented for it to help folks who are part of this. Well, Republicans have come to the rescue. I guess tomorrow it's going to be, you know, the markup is going to happen in the House Energy and Commerce Committee, where the Republicans are going to come in and they are going to save the pre-existing conditions insurance plan. They have a piece of legislation, House Resolution 1549, and you gotta love this, the Helping Sick Americans Now Act, because they care. Remember the people who voted against Obamacare? Remember the people who've wanted to fund it, and who've wanted to repeal it, 36 odd times, 38 odd times? Now they're coming and, they're going to save it. And they're gonna help sick Americans now. Because they care. I love that. And they're going to be people who buy it. Sad, sad stuff. And if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you get the podcast. Stitcher. See you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array.